Tonight by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a very windy Tuesday. It is blowing like crazy outside here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicod, Virginia. The dreaded four-letter word has even been mentioned in the local weather forecasts. What is the dreaded four-letter word? Snow. See, I'm the one that's been sitting around waiting for the other shoe to drop. If I see so much as a flake, there will be power swearing, Tourette's level swearing, uncontrollable, senseless. But yeah, no, it's I mean the winds are fierce out there. Now this is a Tormented Tuesday. We're trying that one out. Because, well, Lord knows we've got stories enough to make it clear. We've already got a post-Moran Monday nomination from Marty. Baseball's Miami Marlins, do I need to explain? I got an intimation of this earlier in email from Michael. I haven't seen the story itself. Michael wrote earlier today with a question that just sort of caught me flat-footed. Baseball and Castro was the subject line. He said, Michael said, there's a lot I don't understand about sports. And I understand it's Miami and all that. But suspending a coach for saying he respects that son of a bitch Castro? What the... At Penn State, students riot when a coach gets dumped for sheltering a serial kitty diddler, and we have a national debate about whether or not the crusty old SOB should have been allowed to coach a few more games. But speak your mind on Castro and your de facto persona non grata. What the hell? It's not like he said, occasionally the Israeli government does something I don't agree with 100%. I mean, that would be grounds for termination. Signed, Confused. Dear Confused! See, if he had just called him a son of a bitch, that would have been fine. But it's the fact that he said he respects him that landed him in the deep and smelly. Right. And I gotta, sometimes it's just an absolute joy to run in here and get behind the microphone, and this is one of those days. I have to share something. Now, it's going to be hard for you to find. I've tried to make it not hard for you to find. I sent the link along to News Ninja Susan for this evening's show post. It was just about a little over an hour ago that I got an internet from Isaac. Isaac was listening to last night's show. Isaac heard Brother Albert talking about how Sir Richard Attenborough narrates everything in his head. And Albert's suggestion that the Jersey Shore would be a much more viewable program if it was only thus narrated. Isaac then, using his skills, made Albert's vision a reality. The humor lies in the nexus between the video and the audio. So running it in the show won't really work. You would just hear narration of the clever monkeys. But what Isaac did after Albert whispered the idea gently into the ear of the universe was to create a little clip called The Clever Monkeys of Jersey Shore. And what a hoot. What a hoot. And Albert is absolutely right. It is much more comprehensible. I guess it's Ozzy Guillen that's involved in the... Okay. Jersey Shore is a much better program when narrated as if it were a nature documentary. So what's happened is, if the show post is up yet and you go to headonradionetwork.com, you will find a link there. If, on the other hand, you go to my Facebook feed, or my Twitter feed, you will also find it there. You can also look on my Facebook page and find it as well. Isaac took a clip of Albert describing it in our conversation and then made it happen, and Ferg was convulsing with laughter, and I was pretty well close along there with him. Ferg has had a long day. You know, in spring, a young man's fancy turns to thoughts of cash. And Ferg, on a lark, didn't think he'd ever, they won't, walked into McDonald's one day and filled out an application. He got a call. The call led to an interview. The interview has led to a job. So my job now is to drive my son to work at his job every day. Somebody will drive him to work every day. He does not have his license yet because, the additional cost of adding a 16-year-old driver to the family insurance would be something on the order of $500 a month. Thanks for playing. No, not happening. But that's new reality around here. Eek. Just eek. Backing up to the baseball story. A quote from Dave Zirin's column today from Marty. As for Guillen, he has crumbled under the weight of all this, saying he is now flying back to Florida to apologize in person to every animal, vegetable, and mineral he might have offended. I want them to know I'm against everything in Cuba 100%. I repeat it again, the way Castro has been treating people for the last 60 years. Zirin notes, let's leave aside the rather glaring irony that the politicians, sports commentators, and Cuban exiles want to show their love of freedom by taking Guillen's job for the crime of exercising free speech. The fact is that when looking for political consistency and clarity, Ozzy Guillen is not the best place to start. The Venezuela-born Guillen's comments on Castro are not very different from what he has always said about Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. He has made comments very favorable about Chavez and very negative. He said, Viva Chavez, after his Chicago White Sox won the 2005 World Series. He's also been one of Chavez's most high-profile critics. But you don't get to be that in Miami. Right? Yeah. So I hope you will, in fact... let me do this one more thing just to make things a little bit simpler. I am going to put this also into the Horn chat room. And there we go. With regard to my son getting to work. Can Ferg bike? Oh, Kath from Canada. Kath. Yes, he can. He's been a successful bike rider for several years now and has never been allowed out on the road for fear that he will be reduced to a pancake or something resembling various and sundry other local fauna by some runaway, reckless, careless homicidal coal trucker. Plus, it would involve bicycling across the New River Gorge Bridge, which is patently illegal, being as how it's a limited access highway and everything. Two-lane roads, gravel shoulders, if there are shoulders at all in some places, and about 15 miles. Yeah, it's not really a bicyclable kind of thing. So that's, you know. But that's just the beginning of the program. I've got to find out more about this this Ozzie Guillen. Okay. I understand better now. This coming in from my head writer, David, in Tennessee, also our sports editor for the program. It's market segment, Bob. The publicly financed brand new ball yard is located in the middle of the Cuban expat community of South Florida. The club's intent is to tap into the Spanish-speaking folks in South Florida to make their club a success. It has been rightly said that to mention Castro in any tone other than disparaging in South Florida is way, way bad. Much like mentioning Hitler to Jews as not that bad a guy. See Marge shot some 30 years ago. Yeah, you remember that, right? Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he was a good guy, but I'm not saying all his ideas were bad either. Marge shot Cincinnati, big German population, but there's also a Jewish population who said, wait a minute! So, in a freewheeling sort of way, Guillen said, I love Castro. He's the toughest guy I know. They've tried to kill him, but he's survived. This is the second time that Ozzie Guillen has spoken well of Senor Castro's durability. The large... Oh, God. The largest Cuban expat organization has promised to picket the new ball yard till, quote, either Guillen is fired or Castro dies. Sadly, I'm guessing that the former is more likely in the short run than the latter. But can we take a moment to acknowledge the truth of what Ozzie Guillen said? He is a tough guy. I mean, the United States, we tried to poison his beard. We tried to... No, really. Really, we did. We tried to poison a skin diving suit so that he would itch to death. Really, Jethro Bodine... Agent Fred, there in the bowels of the NSA. Evening. How you doing, pal? Really, the geniuses at the CIA came up with that one. What we'll do is we'll put poison powder in a scuba suit and we'll give it to Castro and he'll die. Oh, good work, boys! Really. The way we've behaved toward Cuba has been shameful. Because we have engaged in something that, oh, the last I checked, international law kind of frowns on. We've engaged in collective punishment of a people in recourse against its government, and isn't that illegal? Yeah, I thought so. But you know what? Let's see. Eisenhower, Kennedy, LBJ, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Poppy, Clinton, W., and Obama. That's 11 presidents. That Castro has successfully resisted in one degree or another attempts to subvert the government there in Cuba. And, as, of course, as Dave Zirin notes, those are some freedom-loving Cubans down there in South Florida. Freedom-loving! Because here in America, the land where a person may freely speak his mind, not so much. But to be clear where Dave Zirin is concerned, no, they are not violating his right to free speech. because the government is not cracking down on Guillen's comment. The free market is. And that is not covered under the third, under the First Amendment any more than John Rocker's comments about New Yorkers, etc., were a First Amendment violation. You'd be surprised how difficult that is to get people to understand. Marty noting, funny how they in Little Havana seem to forget that after Katrina, when our own government wasn't willing to lift a finger to help Americans, Fidel and Chavez were offering aid, engineers, and doctors, which W turned down because Little Havana wouldn't have liked it. Yeah, let them. I think we need to let them die because that'll mean that they're more free than if they took that communist help. Yeah. Yeah, as David notes, again, anything other than speaking of Castro as a murderous villain twirling his snidely whiplash-like handlebar mustache and sweeping his black cape about him while tying a Cuban expat named Little Nell to the railroad tracks in the Florida Keys is taken by the Cuban expatriate community as supporting his dictatorial ways. So Ozzy's on the spit and is turning slowly. Slowly he turns. Yeah, and again, as Dave Zirin noted, that, well, when it comes to looking for political consistency and clarity, Ozzy Guillen is not the best place to start. Yeah. Now, I want to share a couple of things with you. One, this one goes back a little ways. This comes in from Lynette in Detroit. Lynette said, "Bob, you did it again. I just listened to last Monday's podcast." This is last Monday, not last night. "And you had me sobbing talking about your dad and daughter. I thought about my own dad who died in 1972 at the age of 47 when I was 19. I adored him and I still think about him every day. Please tell your daughter it's cool to think about her grandpa. She shouldn't stop. When she remembers him, it means she remembers something about him that she loved, and love is always good. Thanks and peace, Lynette in Detroit." And it was a touching email. I love to see that kind of commentary come in on the show. I noted to Lynette that I took her offered words as a compliment, but I said I also worry at this propensity of mine to make folks cry instead of laugh. I hope that's not the show's default effect. And Lynette responded by saying, "They were meant to be highly complimentary, but don't worry, I also do plenty of giggling and plenty of raging right along with you when I listen to the show. Keep it real and have a good week." So, yeah, we're giggling along, and you know, that's one of those giggle moments when you get to watch the clever monkeys of Jersey Shore. There are a couple of places in that video that Isaac has pulled together where the narration perfectly matches. They will try different things. Yeah, and they're whole party cups up, drinking, guzzling, right. I'll never be able to see even so much as a clip of what's her name, the Snooki or the Situation, without thinking of the clever monkeys of Jersey Shore. Thank you, Isaac, and thank you, Albert, for inspiring it all. Also, this in regarding last night's program. Dr. John in New York writing, "I was blown away by last night's first hour. I really don't have anything to add to your excellent conversation with Mr. Mann, except that it was the sort of thing you could not find on any other radio broadcast anywhere. Even otherwise good shows like NPR's Science Friday or Fresh Air could never dedicate so much time to such an interesting topic and just let a knowledgeable source talk. And with those shows, odds would be good that the next segment would be some dreadful apology piece for an oil company or the military-industrial complex. Not a concern on the horn. Your side of the conversation gave the interview a sure and steady guidance while remaining unobtrusive. Just an excellent, compelling broadcast. In appreciation," says Dr. John, "I'm doing another listener challenge tonight. I'll match the first $50 in contributions. It's a great way to contribute to the Thrifty 250 and double your money all at once. Thank you sincerely, Dr. John, and we appreciate the challenge. And more than that, more than anything, we appreciate the fact that these little attempts to bring meaningful information along matter and strike a chord and have a certain resonance. So if you match and you can see this by going over to headonradionetwork.com at the little widget, we have finally cleared the 1 week hurdle. And if you match Dr. John's contribution, it will take us up to $710, which will be moving us along in the direction we need to be going, because we are just a wee bit behind right now. Thank you for the other contributions that have also come in, the one contribution last night, as well as the one from Dr. John, and a couple earlier today. Thank you very, very kindly. It has been much appreciated. I want to back up for a minute, if I may, please. Because with yesterday and the conversation with Mr. Mann having been scheduled, it left out, well, there just wasn't a lot of commentary space for what happened over the weekend. And what happened over the weekend was twofold. Obviously, Sunday was Easter. And with Sunday being Easter, it also, every once in a while, Easter coincides with the Masters. Or perhaps it should be renamed the Masses. Because a bigger showing of racism, bigotry, misogyny, I don't know if it's possible to find one in 21st century America than that celebration of white privilege in Augusta, Georgia. But I got a note from my head writer, David, in Tennessee, having caught the tail end of the tournament. And he said, tradition, because that's the way CBS pitches it, a tradition like no other. And there's some tinkling, tinny piano, whorehouse piano music behind it, that kind of thing. No offense to whorehouse piano players. It's right. Tradition, a well-tended process or concept that continues. Augusta National Golf Course, a golf course that is more beautiful than any other inland course. To be prettier, a coastline is needed. It is a beautiful place, Augusta National. The Masters, put in motion by one Bobby Jones. Fine son of the South, Mr. Jones refused to ever become a professional golfer, instead remained an amateur and remains an icon of the sport. The plus four, the slicked back hair, the sweaters, the swing. The Masters, the tournament that in the 30s featured blindfolded colored boys in boxing matches for the gentleman's enjoyment after a challenging day on the course. Slug it out for that 2 bits, boys! Swing more, swing! Gotta be quiet and wait till you hear him and swing at the noise! You want that 50 cents, don't you? Augusta National, an organization that would disband before allowing a woman full participation. Notes David, oh, those traditions! Watching the final round on Sunday, David noted, now this rich pig sporting event is in the grip of one Oogie Oosterboofen. He, a proud South African, speaks good Afrikaans, he does. A product of apartheid? Why, yes, thanks for asking. Some coloreds and blacks did give his family untold benefit over their generations. Thus, he had time to play golf, rent flats in England, and practice, practice, practice! A tradition unlike any other? Not really. It's a time-honored tradition here in America. That's America spelled with 3 K's. Coloreds giving the white man the help he needs to preserve his bragging rights about some contorted tradition unrelated to any sort of common good. but it's a damned fine tradition. You know, heritage, not hate. Yeah, right. But hold on. A guy named Bubba from Baghdad, Florida, wins it, and he's left-handed. That creative 1 in 10. Still a sport of privilege for the 1%, but at least the Afrikaner didn't win. And though it is not Wednesday, it is worth noting that when a guy named Bubba wins the Masters in a year when the female CEO of IBM shows up in pink and is not allowed the vaunted green jacket of other corporate sponsors, and a guy named Bubba wins, well, you know, golly Moses, what, 2,300 years ago when Aristotle in his Metaphysics began discussing what the nature of the divine was, and Aristotle suggested the concept, I believe, of the prime mover, a sort of a giant clockmaker outside the universe who puts his little great big Rube Goldberg device together and flicks it with a finger and then whisks himself away to let it go and good luck, enjoy the fish. 2,300 years later, we have in this year's winner of the Masters, we have the sure proof of the true nature of the divine. Every day, every week, every month, every year, every instant, I am reminded a little bit more. If I'm going to be some sort of religionist, I will worship at the altar of the God of Irony. Congratulations, Bubba! Well, thank you. I'm just glad there weren't no women here to see me win. Bubba. And, of course, it's carried on CBS, and CBS doubled down. Because immediately after the playoff was over, what did you hear but the ubiquitous tick, 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 tick of the introduction of 60 Minutes? And in 60, and there was, let's see, there was a story about austerity and the trouble with the euro, in which some person who probably has lobster for lunch three times a week and twice for breakfast said that the Greek people had been living on a credit card beyond their means, and they've got to tighten their belts. They need, you know, they've got to engage some austerity. And I thought, they? Who's they? People who worked all their lives? Street sweepers? School teachers? Janitors? Yeah, they're the ones who pay for all that excess. And yet these clueless lobster lunchers don't understand why they would run around and set fire to stuff and get pissed. What? Hey, freedom's not just another word for nothing left to lose, right? They've got to stop living. They've got to engage in some austerity and tighten their belts. Well, what happens to a people when tightening one's belt yields the sound of snapping vertebrae and ribs pressing against spines? Because that's where they are. Meanwhile, the lobster lunch crowd is still in Greece and in Berlin and in the rest of Europe, the people who profited by all of that lending. There's no belt tightening there. Oh, by the way, David noting, sadly, when Bubba accepted his green jacket and plaque, he went all Tebow, a-thanking the ghost in the sky. No surprise. Speaking of Tim Tebow, by the way, did you catch this? I saw this over the weekend, and I went, what? Now that he's been traded to the Jets, little Timmy Jebo, Jesus' favorite quarterback, well, one, he preached an Easter sermon down in Texas, But two, prior to that, I guess he wanted to look his absolute best. He was caught on camera in West Hollywood getting a mani and a pedi. Not Hollywood. West Hollywood. We have some listeners in that neighborhood, in that neck of the woods, and I won't be the one to tell you what the delineation is, but there is a distinct difference between going to West Hollywood and going to Hollywood. Now, I mean, there still is, right? Yes. New York Jets quarterback, backup quarterback, that is. Because Mark Sanchez would say, you put backup in front of that! New York Jets backup quarterback, Tim Tebow, friend of Jesus, went to one of the gayest places on the planet. And I don't use that as a pejorative because, I mean, you know, who cares? Welcome. Enjoy life. Live and be well. But he did, and he went there to get a mani and a pedi. So, yes, I'm sorry, David mentioned Bubba going all Tebow. And Tebow, well, I don't know if he keeps going to West Hollywood for manis and pedis, going Tebow may take on an entirely different definition, don't you think? You gotta wonder, is Ted Haggard in Tim Tebow's phone book on his little cell phone? Still no. Okay, David. New York Jets quarterback Tim Tebow, New York Jets alleged quarterback. I think you really do have to put alleged in front of that. But no, 60 Minutes was a doubling down. It was a 1% double down after the whole misogynistic, racist tableau of the Masters. David, in his email, mentioned that business of boys of color blindfolded boxing for the amusement of the white folks there at the course in years past. And not that I doubted or anything, I went and looked it up. And it's true. It really happened. And at a time when, you know, maybe it wasn't 2 bits, maybe it wasn't 50 cents, maybe it was a $5 bill. And a kid could eat for a week on that $5 bill if he'd only perform for the amusement of the wealthy white people. Disturbing country. Of course, if you were listening to the conversation with Charles C. Mann last night, you know that, and this is not historical revisionism. What we've been told all along was a revisionism. The reality is that persons of color in both continents are the ones who, as he noted, built the roads, farmed the land, built the boats, laid out the streets, built the capital of this nation and its executive mansion, who defined the terms of the English that we speak. You know, you take a good racist cracker down in the South and you explain to him that gooey Southern English that he speaks, it that way because that is the way the Africans learned English and it was passed on to the white people, he will turn purple. But for all the color turning, it won't change the facts. It just won't. But like I said, it was a 1% double down after the Masters on CBS. On the one hand, you had the snooty hand-wringing of whatever shall we do about the euro that included statements that nations like Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Ireland need to become more austere. And, of course, you know by now that austerity is code for screw the poor. And, of course, they had the obligatory footage some guy with a mask on spraying with an anarchy circle on one side of a door and spraying a red circle with the euro mark and a slash through that on the other side of the door. Oh, yeah, it was disgusting. Andy in California noting, yeah, I heard 60 Minutes, too. It was awful. No mention of Goldman Sachs' role in taking debt off the books of the Greek government so the Greeks could meet the Maastricht Accord for entrance into the EU's euro currency regime. Greece did not meet the annual 3% and total debt 60% of GDP Maastricht requirements, according to the New York Times and Der Spiegel in 2001. Then a piece was done on polo teams and players in the U.S. Oh, yeah, I'm getting there, Andy. I'm getting there. It gets followed up by a puff piece with Laura Logan on polo's resurgence in the America and the face of the Ralph Lauren advertising campaign, an absolute world-beaten polo player from Argentina named Nacho, who seems like a decent guy. And lo and behold, there's a story within the story of how he's been integral in reaching out to an inner-city Philadelphia program that teaches little children of color to ride horses and play polo. Don't! I'm not kidding. And they just became the national high school polo champions. How many high school polo teams are there in the United States? And they didn't play it full on, but there is a little aspect, and this being an anniversary or near the anniversary and everything, I think it's worthwhile noting. This is the anniversary of Branch Rickey buying the contract of Jackie Robinson from the Montreal Royals for the Brooklyn Dodgers. Laura Logan explained that for a long time they didn't win any games and they could hardly play. And the lady who set up the well-intended program with used equipment and I guess used horses to teach kids from the hood of Philly how to play polo, she said, you know, we weren't very welcome at some of the other places that we went to play with some of the white schools. But now they are the best in the country. And one young man was brought out to shake hands at this one particular polo match on Governor's Island to shake hands with, and he was, of course, a young black man, to shake hands with the vaunted Nacho. And then there was a segment about what it's like to raise polo ponies and how every polo player has to have a string of at least a dozen, and you can only run one horse for about 3 minutes before you have to change out horses. And how back in the 20s and 30s, it was a booming sport in America. And that has sadly gone into decline, but they're trying to bring it back. Yeah, because the 1% needs one more way to rub the rest of our noses in it. Hey, maybe Ferg can quit at McDonald's and go be a stable boy and shovel shit for the 1% in their polo barns. How about that? Andy noting, what fluff garbage to bolster the plutocracy. And then the one that really, really just put the icing on the cake for me, and apparently did so as well for Andy. And the last program, an expose of an orchestra in the capital of the Congo. Gee, says Andy, how totally worthless a show. This was 1 hour dedicated to promote the plutocracy. And the one in you know, the piece about the orchestra in Kinshasa. Was breathtaking in its tone deafness. Because it the intro, the pitch piece for it, the teaser, if you will, at the beginning of 60 Minutes said, these black people living in the Congo have no money. They barely have enough to eat. But this is not a sad story. Wait till you hear what they can do. And a quick cutaway to them playing the Ode to Joy, their symphony playing the Ode to Joy. At that point in time, I stuck around the TV. Granted, I could have gone over and watched the Tony Bourdain marathon, I presume, or something about people who look for junk in junkyards on some other channel. I missed that, too. But when you get an opportunity to view full-on pay-ons to the 1%, you don't turn away. And that segment on the orchestra in Kinshasa was breathtakingly 1%. So they tell the story about how they pulled together instruments and a man learned music from scratch, and you're going, wow, this is admirable. And they start playing and then pulling, and we had 12 violinists and only 6 violins, and sometimes a person would only be able to practice for 15 minutes before he had to, and you're thinking, wow, this is grit, this is determination. And then it changed. About 2 minutes later, that's when a documentary was made, and no one in the world knew about this little orchestra in Kinshasa until a pair of German filmmakers made a documentary about it. And then some opera singers in Germany, people in Germany began sending musical instruments, and 2 German opera singers went down there, and wait till you hear what they did! And what they did, that was footage of a German man teaching an African man to sing Italian opera. You know, that noise. And then there was the German lady who was teaching the women folk singers. You know, the whole, and you think of the whole Wagnerian with the horns on the helmet and the brass bullet bra and all of that stuff. Oh, Brunhilde, you're so lovely. Yes, I know it. I can't help it. That's my exposure to opera. And she said, well, we felt they had to come down here because we saw these people, and it was clear that these people needed our help. And at that point, I just about slapped... I didn't mean to put so much force into it, but about slapped myself silly in the head. These people. And see, previously, I'm pretty sure, previously in the piece on European poor people's austerity, I had heard that phrase again. These people. I mean, we're getting these people to death. All over the place. And yeah, I'm a culture geek. I'm a culture nerd. And when I heard the German opera singer say, we have to help these people learn how to properly sing, I thought, my God, you are in the middle of the cradle of humanity itself, and you think you know how to sing because you can warble according to some European scale? Sugar, there should have been some real cultural cross-connectivity here. You should have been taken off. You should have gone off with some folks down, you know, out into the bush. And you would have heard some real singing, baby. You would have heard the kind of singing that got sung when human beings first figured out they had voices, sunshine. Not, not something that sounds like a dog getting kicked. But once again, and you know, I was watching this with full knowledge of everything that I'd read in 1493 and knowing about the conversation that we were going to be having last night. And I thought, my God, white people on this planet are not going to be happy until they have erased every last vestige of every other culture. Whether it be the mournful pitch of an Andean pipe, or the mystical throb of a tabla, or the mesmerizing chant of a bush people raptured in their joy. These people. But you'll be glad to know that it's not limited to German opera singers. America has a these people and this these people problem, and this particular manifestation of the these people problem is straight from the top shelf of the God of Irony basket. Or collection, I guess, not basket, collection. Now, what do I mean? I mean this. For some reason or another, having to do with things I don't even pretend to understand, Radio Rwanda decided it would be a good thing to ask, no, really, Herman Cain. About the so-called war on women. I don't like that phrase because I don't like the use of war as a term of casual conversation. But he was invited on some show on Radio Rwanda to ask about new polling data that shows that President Obama is way out in front of Willard Doggone Carr Romney on issues relating to women. Here is Herm. Here is Herm's explanation. Sit tight.
The next one's here. Women's issues. A lot of press on this issue in recent days. President Obama seems to be winning that argument as well. But let's throw in this one more, which is who has the preference among men? Mitt Romney gets that one, 52% to 44%. What does all that add up to you?
Well, all that adds up to me is quite simply when they are going head-to-head, and Mitt Romney has the opportunity to promote his message and has his opportunity to better inform people, I believe that you're going to see those clothes. That's an indication. Yes, President Obama is very likable to most people if you just look at him and his family. But if you look at his policies, which is what most people disagree with, it's a different story. And I think many men are much more familiar with the failed policies than a lot of other people, as well as the general public. So I believe that there's still a huge opportunity for Mitt Romney. I'm not particularly bothered by those. Now,
you got that? Women folk in the audience, you're not even Americans anymore. You're other people. Men are much more familiar with policy than other people. Because that's what we have here on planet Earth. We have men and other people. You know, the vaginistas. Other people. Yeah, you'd think that, yeah, I mean, you'd think that this, I don't know, that it was suddenly Latin class and there was suddenly the feminine gender, the masculine gender, and neuter. Other people. I think many men are much more familiar with the failed policies than people with breasts and vaginas. You know, other people. And women, if you have any questions, ask them to you of your husband when you get home, for it is a shame that a woman should speak in church. Remember, we went down that road. Jim noting, your lack of exposure to opera is regrettable. Jim, you are assuming facts not in evidence, my friend. I have been exposed to opera. I've been exposed to a lot of opera. I despise it. It's the ultimate 1% art form. Way, way, way back when I was studying theater in college, we went over a series of different kinds of theater, and the phrase they used for opera was dead theater, because nothing new happens. It's all formal. It's like kabuki. And for me, listening to it is like listening. It's like listening to an animal being tortured. It just is. I can't stand it. The singing makes my ears hurt, like those high frequencies you get at the electric eye door openers in the grocery store that just make your teeth feel like they're coming loose in your jaw. Oh, I've been exposed. I've slept through a number of great operas. I think I was turned early on. One of the first operas I ever saw was as a teenager when we traveled on one of our humanities cultural trips in high school. We traveled to see a opera. And no, we did not travel to see the Opry before some wise ass writes me an email. It was another corner of Tennessee we went to. We went to Memphis. And we saw a play called Manon that features a heroine who winds up stranded on the wastes of the desert wasteland of Mississippi. Desert wasteland of Mississippi. You know, that's like the tropical swamps of the Sahara. And I went, oh, these people were really clueless, weren't they? No, I enjoy classical music. My feeling is if it's Baroque, don't fix it. If it's not Baroque, don't fix it. There we go. You screwed the joke up, Bob. But opera? I'd rather go to the dentist. I haven't mentioned, Ray, that Santorum's out. But he is. In fact, we have here audio courtesy of our chat room moderator, Lottie. We have audio of his press conference in which he left the race. And gone goes the Santorum. Yep. David in Tennessee noting, opera, is there a more stilted and far removed from the real sound of the human voice than opera? I think not. And that was kind of one of the things that was so discordant about the 1% puff piece from 60 Minutes. There was an assumption that the people that were being described in the film did not properly know how to sing until some white people came and taught them how. Yeah. Because, like I said, they'd only been, you know, their ancestors had only been singing longer than any other humans on the planet. Unless, of course, perhaps you take into account the Aboriginal people of Australia. But, you know, that's not white people stuff, so it's not real. You know, it's only real if there's a whole infrastructure that grows up that castrates little boys and torments women into goofy costumes. And right. Okay, Ray, Klingon opera rocks. Yes, I will take your word for it. Clayton noting by email, Confused Tuesday, the clockmaker has Alzheimer's. He says, I rode those Appalachian hills on a two-wheeler, and it was just fantastic. I constantly was in fear for my life with those 200-foot drops, but I didn't have anything like the great gorge that you have to deal with. Good luck. Good luck. I've got a new Appalachian illness for you to deal with. I've got my right shoulder and my right wrist disintegrating. Doctors can only presume it was drinking all that mine water when I was a kid. Wow. For a number of summers, it was all we had to drink. Well, I mean, you know, besides moonshine and still beer. My shoulder is in plaster, and my right arm from my wrist to my elbow encased in plaster to my shoulder. Didn't we, and by the way, Clayton just kind of hitting all the high points. Didn't we screw with Castro's cigars? Yes, we tried to poison his cigars. He said, by the way, at Ohio State Friday, we had a situation with hate crimes on campus. Long live Zimmerman, painted on the Black History Hall. Also a swastika with Mr. Obama's face. Racism alive and well at the Ohio State University. Thanks, Clayton. He says, God bless little Siri, voice interactive feature on the iPhone. Without her, I wouldn't be able to develop this little meme, and so keep it up, brother. Thank you. At least the drugs are fun. Don't you believe it? Thanks, Clayton. That's true, Ray. It would really suck if your dentist listened to opera at work. I would not go to that dentist. Plain and simple. So there's a ton of stuff out there. And we'll get to it in due time, preferably also including your phone calls, because that's what makes this all so much more enjoyable. Look, I could never have come up with that magnificent little moment that Isaac took and ran with after Albert gave life to it last night. That wasn't me. That was y'all. And that's what makes this show special. So, obviously, I think, unless you're brand new to the program, and you know what, you could be. We're available, and the horn is available in so many places that it's almost impossible to tell when or where we might add new listeners. Places like Stitcher Radio, and Tuner Internet Radio, and TuneIn Radio, and iTunes Radio, and the Horn website, and WhiteRoseSociety.org. There's a jillion different ways and places that I probably haven't even gotten around to mentioning yet, or don't even know about, where folks are listening to the horn. So if you're new to the program, welcome. And feel free to chime right in. This is conversation radio. What do they do to describe a tradition unlike any other? Well, this is radio unlike any other. Without the boxing matches between people wearing blindfolds. Oh, I think that's just funny. That's what makes it worth coming down here to play in the Masters, to watch him boy in boxing matches. Ho, ho, ho. Yeah. So we'll take a little break. The Green News Report featuring Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on the way. One of my favorite, well, makes my Thursdays and Friday, Tuesdays and Thursdays better. I do so enjoy their amazing work. They do tremendous work. But they need to be heard all over the country. But, the Green News Report is on the way. So we'll take a little break and come back. Trying to think of something that would be appropriate. As a bumper. Yeah, that's one of the curses of doing this all on the fly. There it is. So we'll, like I said, take a break and come back. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 is the number if you want to save us the toll-free freight. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. And a reminder, there is a $50 challenge on the table from Dr. John in New York. We will get a lot closer to where we need to be. We will meet last night's fundraising goal if you meet Dr. John's challenge, and then we can get to work on tonight's. That's how we keep this all going. But it's, you know, I know it's a pain in the ass to listen to these requests for funding, but you know what? You could listen to these, or we could, you know, theoretically at least stop the programming to give you a commercial about an herbal remedy that will grow hair on a bowling ball that you can pick up with a vacuum cleaner and drop on a Swedish mattress, all to the dulcet tunes of opera playing through a Bose Wave radio. Would you prefer that? This at least has the immediacy and the friendliness of forthrightness. We don't raise money. We don't do radio. That simple. But anyway, that's where it is. So chime in. Lines are open. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, April 10, 2012.
So the colds are colder and the warms are warmer, and the severe is more severe.
It's official. March 2012, the warmest March on record in the U.S.
We are looking at fire conditions from New York City all the way down to Greenville, as far west as parts of western Kentucky.
So much for April showers. Wildfires break out along the eastern seaboard. Plus, fracking boom leads to natural gas glut and fracking earthquakes.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Big oil does not get subsidized. They have tax breaks like many other industries do.
Nice, Rush. I wish I could not get subsidized like big oil. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, I know you got a lot to cover today, so I'll be quick about this, but this has been a bugaboo of mine. We're hearing this in the media over and over again. Gas prices have doubled under Barack Obama. Now, the fact is, in July of 2008, under George W. Bush, the gas prices were higher than they are now, averaging above $4. The reason they have doubled since Obama took office is because gas prices had crashed when the Great Recession hit under George W. Bush. Just another piece of Republican propaganda that the mainstream media doesn't bother to correct.
You make a really good point. You hear it over and over and over again, and it's still wrong.
And the Democrats don't correct it, but even worse, the mainstream corporate media doesn't bother. They let them get away with that nonsense. Anyway, what not nonsense do you have for us today?
Well, it's official. March 2012 was the warmest March on record for the U.S., according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Over 15,000 distinct all-time local weather temperature records were broken, with average March temperatures nearly 9 degrees warmer than the 20th century average for March. The first quarter of 2012 is also the warmest on record. And the last 12 months, the warmest 12-month period on record. Importantly, the draft analysis from NOAA concludes that the March heat wave was fueled in part by global warming from human activity. They said that it added to the magnitude of the heat wave. But up in Alaska, Anchorage saw the opposite extreme. The same weather patterns that withheld snow in the U.S. instead dumped it all on Anchorage, breaking that city's all-time seasonal snowfall record. Europe and Russia also saw record snowstorms. Climate scientists have predicted for decades that global warming would lead to a trend towards more frequent extreme weather events, and that connection was even mentioned out loud on CNN. Here's meteorologist Alexandra Steele.
The climate change we're seeing, you know, extremes kind of are ruling the roost, and really what we're seeing, more become the norm. So the colds are colder and the warms are warmer, and the severe is more severe.
The colds are colder and the warms are warmer. No, she's not talking about the meek DLT. She's talking about what we've been talking about over the past 3 years here on the Green News Report as we see this week in, week out. More extreme temperatures, more extreme highs, more extreme lows, more extreme tornadoes, floods, droughts, fires. It's amazing, and it's as if it's not even happening in the bulk of the mainstream corporate media.
Now, while the March heat wave was a guilty pleasure for many accustomed to snow in the north, these unstable weather patterns have consequences. The warm winter has fueled an early tornado season in the south and Midwest, and the dry air is fueling an eruption of brush fires along the length of the eastern seaboard. Here's NBC's Al Roker.
many fires going on throughout the east. Milford, Connecticut, they had to suspend Amtrak service. Staten Island has wildfires going on. And then in New Jersey, a forest fire burning there. The blaze began earlier today in Burlington County. And as far south as Florida, we're talking about drought conditions, no rain in sight. At least 20 wildfires are going on. We are looking at fire conditions from New York City all the way down to Greenville, as far west as parts of western Kentucky.
Now, last summer we saw record fires in Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and now we're seeing wildfires and drought in the Northeast, where it's usually rainy this time of year?
Yep, but wait, there's more. Another unexpected consequence of the exceptionally warm winter, weak demand for home heating has created an oversupply of natural gas, and the U.S. is running out of places to store it. The controversial natural gas drilling technique of fracking has triggered a frenzy of drilling across the country. The industry-induced oversupply has depressed natural gas prices so much that several natural gas companies have announced they will cut back on drilling operations and even close some wells in an effort to boost profits.
But the oversupply of natural gas is, frankly, the least of our problems when it comes to fracking, as we learn in this new report.
Yes, the slowdown in natural gas fracking is good news for homeowners, because it means fewer earthquakes. A new study from the U.S. Geological Survey concludes that fracking is, quote, almost certainly behind the jump in earthquakes across the Midwest over the last few years.
Unbelievable.
They say it appears to be linked to oil and gas drilling, especially wastewater injection wells.
So now the fossil fuel industry is causing our own planet to crumble. Let's all look the other way, shall we? For more on that story and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Download our reports anytime at iTunes. You can listen to us via your mobile device on Stitcher Radio, and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I did shake, baby, shake it. I did shake it, baby, shake it. I did shake, don't you let it break now. Shake it, shake it, shake it. I'm all over.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Fifteen past the hour, hour number two, well underway now here on the Horn. The Head-On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. We call it Conversation Radio. Email rolling in from Kate. Subject line, old DJ habits, multiple exclamation points. Yow! Great segue. This makes me want to put on tight pants and do something trashy like the old days. Ah, Kate, you're never too old. By the way, please explain Dr. John's challenge. Is he going to meet the 50 that comes in during the program, or does each donation have to be 50? I can't do 50 today. If I do 15, will he double it? Yeah, that's how it works. John is standing good for $50 in contributions. In other words, doubling $50 worth of contributions to make it the 100 that we need to cover basically every show. That's how that works. So, yeah, your 15 would be counted in with toward the 50 total, leaving 35 yet to be pulled together. So, and I apologize. Sometimes maybe I don't make that clear enough. Thank you. This in from Jim, comparison and contrast. Last night was a great program. Tonight you demean polo and opera. Only because they deserve it, Jim. Only because they have, because neither has any redeeming value. Opera is a dead art form, and polo is an elitist excuse for rich people to chew up more property. You know, what was it, 3, 4, 5 football fields length that the polo, field covers? Yeah. The other part of that CBS puff piece in favor of the plutocracy, as Andy notes, was introducing us to a former world-class polo player who now raises polo ponies in Aiken, South Carolina. Really? Bully for him, I suppose. I guess you've never been to the Met in New York City. Nope. The Washington Opera in D.C. Nope. Or beautifully sung and crafted works in other cities elsewhere. Well, like I, no, that was a traveling company that the did that opera in Memphis, and they were quite accomplished, and they weren't flatting or sharping or playing the music in E flat minor diminished Anabaptist or whatever. They played it all exactly as it was meant to be played, and it was awful. I mean, terrible, abysmal, unbearable to listen to. I'm sitting there in a tuxedo among a bunch of people who talk with their teeth clenched, and it was just yuck, nightmarish. And yes, I've seen polo played too. It's ancient and violent. Its origins are in what, the Near East, the Middle East, the Persians, the Afghans invented it. I think they still play a version of it involving the body of a dead goat. And anyone who's ever seen The Man Who Would Be King knows of that fictionalized version of it. Takes tremendous amounts of skill and is something that is reserved for the... Jim signs off sadly, Jim. If you'd seen that 60 Minutes the piece, you would have also noted... that Mr. Nacho has 300 horses. The dozen he brought with him to Governor's Island in New York was just his traveling team. Andy noting, it's necessary to have a fine stable in your backyard to compete, or at least a large Argentinian ranch. What an infomercial for the top 1%, Andy notes. Are they readying us for the age of the great Gatsby? Get used to it. Well, we are already a society that lives vicariously. Witness Jersey Shore, for instance. Michael, going back and forth, he says about opera, he says, it's strange to me that you should call opera the ultimate 1% art form. I mean, I get where you're coming from, but one of the stories my father always tells about my great-grandfather involves opera. He died before I was born and was a working-class Italian immigrant. I forget if it was records or radio, I'd have to ask Dad, but Dad says as a child, he always remembered him listening to opera in the evenings after a long day at work. Now, my dad is no fan, says Michael, and it always puzzled him why his grandfather was so fond of it, but eventually, he figured it must have had a lot to do with being an Italian. Well, yeah, it's a cultural art form, and it doesn't translate. You know, there's an old Italian saying out there that bed is the poor man's opera. One of the things that made records, recordings, vinyl, acetate, whatever, so wonderful is that music became approachable. But it's the music of the 18th and the 19th centuries, and it, for me, it has no relevance in the 21st. None. Zero. Zip. Nada. Zilch. Niente. Just doesn't. It was the rock and roll of its day. All music was the rock and roll of its day. Rock and roll may be dead, replaced by whatever is the music of the day today. It is constantly changing and constantly leaving forms in the dust. Most disturbing, however, was this notion that African people could not appreciate music until they had been taught European music. Therein lies the disturbance. But yeah, Michael and I going back and forth, I said, you know, my favorite opera, Bunny of Seville and What's Opera Doc by Warner Brothers and Chuck Jones. He said, so it's not all bad then, see? Yeah, and that's why I warbled out the whole Obwunhilda line. So, there we go. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so, I was like reading this article in the Times about the state of, the so-called welfare reform. Did you catch that article?
Yeah, I did, about how many people it just sort of threw in the ditch.
Well, it's just, I just, that was like one of the most disturbing, depressing articles. I mean, you know, we now have, I think it was like 6 million people, they're estimating, who are just, you know, they have no access to anything except for food stamps, which is, you know, 50 million people. Surprise, surprise, because there's no time limit on that. Because we wouldn't want to get in the way of the subsidies for big agra.
Right. That's
the
only. That's the only reason food stamps weren't included in the welfare reform that Bill Clinton signed.
Right.
You know, if there really is a Pearly Gates and there really is some grand accounting that one faces in the afterlife, then Bill Clinton, that's going to be number one on the list. It's not going to be Monica Lewinsky or the stain on the dress or I did not have sex with that woman or I did not inhale. It's going to be, why did you screw millions of people when you had the chance not to?
No, and it's incredible because in any sort of, developed country, they all have some type of income support. I mean, do you realize that we have millions of people without? It's incredible. I just, after I read it, I just shook my head and I thought, oh my God, you know, what is happening to this country? I mean, literally millions of people who are just, you know, I guess they're selling their blood, selling their bodies. Whatever you have to do when you have not two nickels to rub together. I mean, think about how, I mean, it's just to me, it boggles the mind. It's like, you know, what is this? It's incredible. It's horrifying.
And God forbid it should be presented to the American people in anything other than, that's why I just sat there watching in slack-jawed amazement at the stunning tone deafness of that whole 60 Minutes presentation.
Oh, yeah, no, that was, I mean, I didn't know what you were talking about, except I was listening to it, and I think I shot you off something about it that's making me feel sick, because...
Yeah, sorry for that, by the way.
No, that's fine, but it's just, yeah, it's just stunning. It's kind of, the real things that are going on in this country are being just sort of overshadowed by this, exercise and seeing what the plutonomy is doing. It's just like, all of it is horrifying. I mean, polo and black children and, you know, the little...
I mean, what producer at CBS thought, hey, this is a great feel-good story. Let's tell the proles about polo.
Yeah.
And we've got some happy dark-skinned children who've been taught to ride the ponies.
I just, as soon as I heard that, I flashed on, you know, little pickaninnies, you know, making the whitey feel good. I mean, I'm just like, are you kidding me with this? What year? I didn't know what the hell. I'm like, you combine that with the Masters and the name. All of it is just so horrific. It's just like...
Well, when David told me that story about the little boys blindfolded to box each other, at the Masters after a grueling day on the links, I thought, nah, you know, David's just making that up.
Well, wait.
No, David wasn't just making that up.
When was this supposed to be happening?
Oh, it's back. You know, the Masters was founded in the 30s and Augusta National was built and all that. It comes forward from there. I mean, we're talking about Augusta, Georgia, not too awful far from Savannah.
No. I mean, it's just horrific, and the sort of, you know, I mean, it's so embarrassing that even I have to retweet it, because even John McCain was like, oh, dear God, can we move into the 21st century with this? And, of course, you know, someone like him, I mean, he's a warmongering freak, but, you know, anybody with any sense can see that, well, wait a minute, this sort of retro war on women is not really winning us any fans, you know, the Republicans with sense. And so it's all just kind of piling on. It's like, there you have the Masters.
But let's be clear about something, Sandra. The little lady from IBM.
Yeah.
She knew her place. She didn't say a word about it. She showed up in pink. You know, because it goes so well with green.
No, it's too much. I couldn't even believe. I'm like, damn, lady. And the same thing with that writer who dared say anything was chastised.
She has been spoken to.
Yes, like, well, what is this? So, yeah, I mean, you know, and I...
But isn't all of this just proof that the privileged power structure is getting really nervous?
Well, not only that, but it's completely out of whack. I mean, to their own detriment. They think that what they're doing is helpful, but, you know, it's really not. When you eliminate the contravailing power, it's there for a reason. It's not just there, you know, to challenge the 1% or the power structure. I mean, if everything goes to hell, you know, they stand to go down the drain, too. So, you know, the arrogance and just the way they're all performing is, you know, it's disturbing to watch, because all of us down below, I mean, it's starting to get real scary in this country. I mean...
You sent me that article from the Telegraph with the...
The one about the Chevy Chase thing?
Yeah, Americans are turning into British-style snobs, with, of course, a photograph of the cast from Downton Abbey.
I just wanted to share that because...
I love that line. Order a cocktail at the Chevy Chase Country Club, and you'll step back into the antebellum Savannah. The blacks wait on wasps, showing all the deference expected of them. You won't find many Cohens either lounging on the well-kept lawn.
And this is right now, and this is, by the way, the same club that David Gregory is clamoring to join. You know, that's not the media. I mean, in fact, he has to be... I mean, you know, I didn't really give a F when that... Who's that guy who croaked?
Oh, Russert?
Yeah, but...
No, Wallace.
No, Russert.
Oh, okay.
But this guy who's replaced him, I mean, he's absolutely horrific. With every show, the guy is talking about... Well, how do we explain the pain that America has to go through now because of the entitlement?
Why is it poor folks who live in nothing but pain have to go through pain because of the piss poor decision and abject unmitigated greed of the 1%? That's what's never been explained.
And they're wealth defenders like David Gregory doing his dance behind Karl Rove, and it's just like. You know, you aren't the media. They are just wealth defenders. The Versailles, you know, the people who hung around Louis XIV? I swear to God, it's just like that.
We're well on the way.
Not Louis XV or XVI.
No, the Sun King.
Louis XIV.
Yeah, the people.
The real deal.
The people who got up to watch him go potty in the morning.
That motherfucker. And then that's what it's just, you know, it's like you get people like David Gregory. I mean, it's just like, you know, you are so transparent. I mean, does he even realize what the hell he sounds like?
Because he's got a bubble and an echo chamber around him. Oh, you know, again, those revolting people who talk with their teeth clenched. Oh, David, you're so brilliantly addressing the hard realities of America.
No, I mean, they're all so, I mean, it's just really, I don't even know. I just recoil at all of the sort of explanation for this mindset. And the idea that we are so far down the rabbit hole that I'm looking at Obama playing fucking Reagan speeches about the Buffett rule to make his point. I'm like, where the hell am I?
Oh, I know.
Reagan is now...
Reagan is our touchstone for progressivism?
Yeah. Now, listen, I understand what Obama is so-called trying to do, but...
I guess that's kind of like Stalin making Lenin look like a liberal?
Well, I don't know, maybe you didn't find that weird, but I was just like...
No, it weirded me out. I understand the motive for it, you know, slamming St. Reagan back in their face.
No, but it's not even that. It's the idea that, you know, Obama only reaches to other conservatives from the past now, you know, from Teddy Roosevelt to Reagan. We don't hear about anybody else. I don't even think Obama's ever even mentioned FDR.
No, never, I don't think.
And it's just, I mean, it's like, you know, and I'm not like criticizing, you know, it's just whatever with Obama. I guess he's doing what he's doing, but...
Well, I got to tell you, that the paragraph that followed the no Cohens lounging on the well-kept lawn paragraph was in that Telegraph piece was equally horrifying. I didn't realize that there is a humongous burgeoning industry in this country. This Yanks are happy to fork out £350 a session to learn to talk like a posh Brit. Huh? Really? And I guess they are. You know, that quote, we don't have a queen, but we do have Palm Beach. because even Jewish multimillionaires cannot buy access into what they refer to as this sealed society.
Well, no, but I mean, you know, yeah, you know, bully for them. I mean, all of that just sounds like a bunch of tosh, you know, to be honest. You know, I'd cut off, you know, the hand first. I don't know. Just
and see, but there is something at play, and it's you know, just below the cultural surface here, because at the same time that, well, after I was dutifully shocked, horrified, sickened, everything else by the polo and the opera on 60 Minutes, you know, because us proles need some enlightening, I guess. Yeah, because we're all just like those people in Kinshasa, white or black.
Are you talking about Warner Brothers? That's the opera.
Yeah, that's the opera I'm into. What's Opera Doc and Bunny of Seville?
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more. But then I
get the clicker and I go, oh Jesus, give me some relief. And I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe I'll get some Nova or something on PBS. So clickety-clickety-clickety over to PBS. What do I get? I get Charles Dickens' Great Expectations.
He must have thought you was in some sort of extra hell, huh?
Oh, it was terrible, you know. So, you know, I cheated, and I ran over and read the synopsis on Wikipedia and went, F this.
What, Great Expectations?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I love Dickens. Dickens is writing, you know, he was the most successful man ever to get paid by the syllable.
Yeah, no, you know, but you know Dickens, you know, he was very,
But he was socially conscious.
He was very focused because of, you know, how much his family was slapped down by the social structures at the time.
And
so.
he was a tireless advocate for, you know, ending the workhouse and at least pointing out that the poor were living like hell in England.
Yeah, well, no, but he found that, you know, I mean, I read some articles that he wrote about the work life in this country, which he was stupefied by. So anyway, I don't want to get on to Dickens, but yeah, he definitely was. I don't know. He was different.
Well, he's a tough read if you grew up reading Fitzgerald and Hemingway and even Faulkner or God knows James Joyce. It's just that, you know, million words to describe a leaf phenomenon that drives me a little bit nuts.
But I agree with you on that. The only Dickens that I read was, you know, when I was kind of forced to, but some of his social commentary
is brilliant. Well, I mean, you know the A Christmas Carol is nothing but social commentary.
And you know, but it's not anything that I'd say. Oh, I'm gonna read Bleak House this weekend. No.
See, that's the thing. I actually took a class in law school where we had to read Bleak House.
Yeah, no. But that's
Jarndyce
yeah.
versus Jarndyce. Is scorched into my brain, and I was just page after page going, Jesus, will something good please happen?
Yeah, well,
you've got all of these characters that he just paints meticulously, perfectly, and you absolutely know who and what they are, and these magnificent names.
Yeah,
and it's just a progression of a shitstorm on human beings.
Oh, I know. It isn't Middlemarch, and it sure in the hell ain't Austin.
No.
Anyway,
But then again, I have my own issues with Heathcliff. Oh, Heathcliff.
Oh, see, that's not. You know what? I read that book. I love that book. I read that book when I was quite young. So stop.
I know. I read it. But, you know, still way up on my list is, and by the way, my opinion of Charles Dickens went up considerably, Sandra, when I read that Henry James hated him.
Issues, huh?
Yeah. I mean, he wrote all of this nasty stuff about Dickens, and I'm thinking, buddy, I read your stuff.
Because
either William or Henry, you know, I can leave him or I can leave him.
Well, no, but I mean, to think that you know, that's the world that they're, like, rapidly trying to recreate here, you know, which is just...
Well, it most assuredly is, and I have to turn you on to something here. I got a link to a piece dated April 1st, 1885, by one Henry George. Mark sent me an email earlier today saying, this is really long, but you really do need to read it.
Well, is this Henry George, the economist?
Well, he was a several times unsuccessful candidate for mayor of New York.
Is he the one that is
newspaper editor
about land values?
Yeah, he was a newspaper editor who became a lecturer and critic of the economic system. This is a brilliant website called historyisaweapon.com, and I love that concept. And this is a lecture he delivered in Iowa on April 1st, 1885, called The Crime of Poverty. And I'm sitting here reading it, and I'm understanding that I'm reading a Victorian, and knowing what Twain taught us about how Victorians thought of themselves, you know, the very pinnacle of existence. You know, Twain was running around with a box full of hat pins just trying to pop balloons for all he was worth. But here's a guy who really gets it. You know, this is not a... I mean, he's not spouting Marx and Engels or anything, but he's talking about how a city can be so rich and at the same time so poor. And talks about Native Americans traveling east who were amazed not by the machines nor by the great buildings. What amazed and horrified Native Americans traveling east was that we made children work instead of being children. And lo and behold, I read this thing, and a little bit later I see that clip from Herb Cain,
yeah.
You know, about men and other people.
Oh my God! I mean, I didn't see it, but I heard. I mean, I can't even wrap my head around it. But yeah, anyway.
And I thought back to dig this. It's a little thing from the Henry George piece. He says, "I read in the New York papers a while ago that the girls at the Yonkers factories had struck." The papers, and you know, we were talking about David Gregory and everything, and they're just sort of self-gratifying, self-congratulating. The papers said that the girls did not seem to know why they had struck, and intimated that it must be just for the fun of striking. Then came out the girls' side of the story, and it appeared that they had struck against the rules in force. They were fined if they spoke to one another, and they were fined still more heavily if they laughed. There was a heavy fine for being a minute late. He goes on and details this, and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, it's Foxconn.
Well, exactly, you know, or the
we're 125 years out, and nothing's changed.
No, or right now is the Amazon warehouse and all the other sort of internet warehouses that you click to buy your shit from. Those setups are like work people with it into their lives and stuff. They're horrifying, those warehouses. And you have the whole phenomenon of people going across the country in RV vans. And that's what they do. They go from
from Good Sam to Good Sam.
From one $10 an hour, no benefit, unsafe work environment to the next, you know, for Amazon.
And this, you know, and that coincides so well with what David in Tennessee just sent in. He said, here's the scary part. He said, the more that's done and taken from the middle and below, the more the for-profit media tells us that the middle and down just need to give up. He said, seriously, the more that's been taken from us, the more that the flush flimball types tell us we still have and need to be prepared to give up, or would that be to give back to our betters?
Oh, no, I mean, no, the push is, I don't know. I shudder to think a horror show that we're facing in the lame duck Congress and beyond. I think it's all going to be sort of bumping along through this election year, but after the elections, all these cuts are going to kick in. I mean, this is...
We ain't seen nothing yet,
Sandra. It's horrifying what's coming down the pike if they stay on schedule.
And by the way, a little reminder coming in from Ron in Raleigh. He said, limits on food stamps. He said, Bob, there is a limit on food stamps, but it's only for single, able-bodied men. He said, I got 3 months, and I was limited to that amount once every 2 years.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No. That's the same thing in California, too. If there's no dependents, kids... Then yeah, you can only get. That's right. I forgot. That's right. I mean, so we're in a situation now though where there aren't any jobs, and I told you about how the participation rate keeps falling down, right?
Yeah.
If you have 153 odd million people in the labor, you know, who's in the labor force, and you have a population of 330 million, number-wise, you probably have about 243 million people who are actually able to work. So that would really make you have a 41% unemployment rate. Do you get where I'm going?
Yeah, chaos.
And so, no, I mean, so if you look at those sort of numbers, you know, it's really scary what's going on. You have a shrinking amount of people who are actually contributing to an economy that is shedding jobs instead of growing jobs. And so you got to have a government or a propaganda machine convincing all these people that the system somehow is working for them when they know it's not. So what do? You just pass a bunch of laws to turn it into a police state so when they get fed up and hit the streets, it'll be like, oh, no, motherfucker, you're done. You can go to jail now or not, you know, because they seem to have ended the various Bill of Rights. I mean, is there any left? I'm serious.
The only thing is left is the life support system for the religion industry portion of the First Amendment.
And some sort of a perverted Second Amendment, right?
Right, that allows, you know, stand and blaze. I saw a story over at Think Progress earlier today that really did kind of stop me in my tracks. It was written by, here we go, I got it right here. It was written by John Saltz, the founder and chairman of VoteVets.org. And it doesn't take on any issues relating to the Second Amendment. It is simply an observation and a piece of writing by Mr. Saltz that George Zimmerman, under the stand and blaze rule that exists in Florida and a number of other states, had, just really stop and let this one sink in, had more legal authority to shoot and kill than our troops do in actual warfare. That's what these stand and blaze laws do.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, yeah, and it's a complete lack of citizens functioning in their democracy, which is a part, I have to blame them on some of this, because these laws are completely ridiculous. All you have to do is have a few petitions, and now you got Coke and everybody else falling away from Alec, because that shit operates in the dark, and they just do what they want. But as soon as some sunshine is on it, they scatter like rats. It's amazing. But people can't sustain this because, A, there's no jobs, there's no health care, and you're losing your housing. You see how that works?
I wish I didn't.
And it's very hard to sustain on our end. And with the state, and I'm about ready to call the U.S. now just the state, because government, which is a humanizing factor of a society, is rapidly going away. And you're left with the state. The state isn't very good, Bob. You know, as an entity, it's just not what you want. You do want a government. You know?
See, I'm one of those people that thinks that government, you know, I'm one of those, I guess, fuddy-duddy old purists who thinks that government is a good thing.
When people are so stupid here when they're always railing against the government, it's like, no, stupid idiots. If you don't have a government, then you're left with the state. And I don't think most Americans understand the state. But when your ass is being clubbed because you're walking around, oh, help me, I need a job, or if you're trying to get on a plane, your ass is poked and prod, that's the state, if I can give a simple example of the workings of a state.
Yeah, as in, you know, state-sanctioned, you know, state fascism, state...
Right, just, you know, it's just not a very helpful entity. I mean, and for us...
Did you happen to catch Paul Krugman in the last day or so?
Which one? I don't know if I've...
I got it right here. It'll... pop up here. His column, The Gullible Center.
Oh, yeah, you know I'm all over that. That shit, I was rolling on that because, see, Krugman is right there with the, in a minute, it's an ideology, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and because Barack Obama dared to say that the Paul Ryan budget was toxic and that it was social engineering and yada, yada,
yeah.
Yada, that he was some... And lo and behold, you know, today, in a story of another one of Bob's right-wing story pitches, I'm supposed to, they want me to have on the show this goober who is a former greeting card rhyme writer who has declared that Barack Obama wants to lead us into communism. But the thing that struck me with Krugman's column is that they want to call him a socialist when he's doing everything in his power to protect, and a communist, and anti-Kenyan, anti-colonialist, yada, yada, yada. He's doing everything in his power to protect the 1% that he possibly can. And they don't even have the common gratitude to thank him for the fact that that their heads aren't on pikes.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, I mean, he didn't say a truer statement than when he said, only, what's between you and the pitchfork is me. That was the most truest statement that man said. I'm sorry.
And it was true to an almost platonic ideal level of truth.
Yeah.
But by the same token, they want to call him these names, but we can't. But when we talk about what they do, I think it's, you know, the word that we've sort of bandied about, Sandra, is anarcho-randians. You know, these people who follow Ayn Rand and just want to see what happens if we let business run everything and drive us into total warlord chaos.
Well,
but that's too, I think that's too dry a biscuit for the people to comprehend, anarcho-randians. But we can't use fascists either, because that means that means Hitler, so that's out. What the hell do we call these right-wingers?
Well, no, I just think that, you know, we're back to the default setting of the U.S. is, you know, just complete, I don't want to say social Darwinism, but that almost is the default. And these sort of eruptions of humanity just sort of ebbs and flows. And I think, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the turning type philosophies, but there's one thing about it that I have to agree is, well, when you have a whole couple, three generations die off, the memory is gone. And so you just start up again with all the mistakes. And we seem to be right there again. If I can use the Jobs Act as an example, why in the hell would they deregulate even more? You know what I mean?
And yet, lo and behold, there, I saw it today. I think it was in my daily Salon Digest email. The word has gone out to the faithful purveyors of talking points that we have to be in favor now of crowdfunding and crowdsourcing.
I call that crowd frauding. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but no, there it was. In praise of over at Salon.
Half the liberals that I notice on the Twitter feed are for it, and you have half that are kind of against it, and then you have the sort of reasonable econ writers who are all against it. And then you have, we must re-elect Obama. You see what I'm saying?
And
that's what it always comes down to. You know, when you try to say, but, and then you just sort of shut down with that. And it's like.
And I try to be really careful not to get caught in that, but I do.
Yeah.
This practical optimism. Did you see that the Supreme Court is going to take and I don't know if you remember, but it was several months back,
the Montana
case.
Yeah, no, I saw that Ginsburg. Yeah, they're like quite keen on making whatever point they want to make, and they seem to think that Kennedy is a bit, oh, I didn't realize this would happen type of mentality. We'll see.
We'll see after, whatever thumbscrews or whatever are applied to Mr. Kennedy. What scares me is every time somebody gets optimistic that, oh, you know, this is going to change things. Well, yeah, it does, Sandra, and it changes them for the worse.
Yeah, not only that, but I mean, you know, you were the first person, you know, outside of my bubble, which is in my head, that could relate to the whole Lochner thing. I was like, damn, did someone else actually know about this bullshit? And so, of course, I'm thinking, you know, wow, this court is reminding me of that nightmare big time. You know, like the system of 1896. You know what I'm saying?
Right, because what this it's terrifying.
I swear. I'm like, is this so? It's that's what it's starting to look like. And so, like you're saying, every case you think, oh no, and you can see it in your
because,
mind's eye what they can do with it.
You know, I guess the thinking on the court is that there is some ambiguity in Citizens United, because the Montana decision says that it does not, that Citizens United does not apply to state campaign financing laws. And this, of course, gives the rats on the court the opportunity to say, oh, hell yes, it does. It applies to everything all the way down to dog catcher, baby. And if you want a super PAC to make sure that you don't have a socialist, a Koch brothers-funded, Alec-inspired super PAC to make sure you don't have a socialist dog catcher, well, more power to them. I mean, tell me you can't see that, Sam.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I'm still sort of tripping on the whole idea that you know, these Republicans in robes will go so far as to, you know, F up the whole commerce. I mean, this is a, like I said, I think you and I probably disagree on the health care, because I really am, I have problems with the whole mandate, but not to the point where I want them to toss out the whole 20th century, Bob.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This is their opportunity to do that.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm not, you know,
I guess I'm being ickily pragmatic about this, which is, you know, kind of a violation of my own idealism.
Yeah,
I see so much import in the expansion of the Medicaid that's in there, because
you think that that's going to over, but there is
over time that absorbs the mandate is what I'm getting at.
I know, but, you know, there's so many subsidies that are being thrown at the insurance industrial complex. It's horrifying to me that it will become more entrenched, and I'm not too sure what's going to overtake it if they're getting more income support for 30 million new customers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I got probably,
I guess my feeling on it is that if this thing, if the Medicaid threshold is set at 134% of poverty level, and right now it's at 0%. I mean, you can be poverty level and not qualify for Medicaid.
No, but you're suggesting that this expansion is going to act as some sort of means of competition for the insurance companies. Is that what you're suggesting ultimately?
Well, I don't know that it's competition, but unless it's sort of a designated competition. What I mean is that if it's 134% now, in 10 years maybe it's 160%.
Okay, yeah, okay, I don't know. I see them transferring money to the IRS to enforce this mandate, and you know, the focus, I guess, is on the mandate, but what are the people going to get? You know, if you have to buy that product, and
well, my conversation,
I don't see it being very good. I see you being stuck with it, and you're going to have to cover all sorts of costs.
I was very much impressed and moved is the wrong word, but I was very much impressed with the conversation I had on air with Wendell Potter while I was in Washington D.C. Now, this is not a man who loves the insurance industry. At great personal risk to himself and his future, he dropped the dime on the insurance industry.
Yeah. Oh no.
What he explained to me is that even with the mandate in place, it is not the same insurance industry. He said there's a bit of alligator tears about the insurance industry's responses to the Affordable Care Act, because they really want those new customers.
But what they want,
Sandra, is they want those new customers, but they want the old rules. And he started pointing out things like what the Affordable Care Act says vis-a-vis how much of insurance company intake can be used for executive compensation, advertising, blah 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 blah, versus delivery of actual patient care. The stuff about pre-existing conditions, keeping 20-something kids on their parents' policies. Those are the things that the insurance industry wants to go away, because basically the insurance industry wants to have its cake and eat it too.
No, I understand, and I mean, I do appreciate the idea that you know, if they don't have this mandate, obviously the insurance companies will cease to exist. But at the moment, they just seem to be, everybody I know is paying more and more and more for their insurance right now. You see what I'm saying?
But I think there are, and that's because it's not fully deployed as yet.
I understand. Well, okay. I mean,
let me just point out one other thing that I thought was salient on the point, and that is that the insurance companies, in wanting to have it both ways, are going to get one or the other. If the Affordable Care Act goes away,
the insurance industry
is going to collapse.
Yeah, no. I agree with you. That's what I mean. So basically, in this, the way this is framed, it's extending the life of the insurance companies with the hope of
saving
more American lives. Is that
And it's putting the insurance industry on life support until we can get the mechanisms in place for more expanded coverage. And there's one more thing I just want to point out about the mandate, and that is this, and we've discussed this. You know, the woman who filed one of the suits recently declared a medical bankruptcy.
Right.
Because she was opposed to the mandate and didn't want to be forced to buy insurance coverage. So, you know, and you are far more economically astute than I, Sandra. But by virtue of her wanting, you know, they were paying out of pocket till they couldn't pay anymore, and they declared bankruptcy so they could protect their home. In other words, they shifted.
Yeah.
They shifted. They did an economic burden shift of their problem onto us.
Yeah, well, no,
okay?
No.
And so I, you know, and I know I'm a crank, and I know I can be hateful, but the fact of the matter is, I want a deadbeat POS like that woman and her husband. If the only way to protect the people who are playing fair and playing by the rules is to make those POSs buy insurance, I'm kind of for that.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. It just seems, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of thinking it's just going to be a nightmare for people who are subjected to the open market, even with these exchanges and subsidies. But, you know, we'll see. I don't know. I just am a bit, have a bit of a jaundiced outlook about any of these.
Well, and I don't think that is improvidently taken on your part. I think to be leery of this kind of thing is very, very healthy and very, very intelligent. Because it can be screwed up by any number of Republican Congresses. I read an analysis today about the likelihood of the Republicans taking the Senate next year, which I remind people is actually what the real contest is. They only need 4 seats.
Yeah, no, I know.
And one of them is almost a lead pipe cinch, Nebraska. Debbie Stabenow has problems in Michigan. And there's a couple. I mean, it's almost a sure thing, and they only need 3 if they get the White House, because Jeb Bush will be the president of the Senate, and be the tie-breaking vote. So you know, there's a lot of trouble coming.
No, I understand. I mean, but the thing is you know, as more people are exposed to the upside of it, then pressure can come to bear even on, you know, the horror show that's called the Congress. So it's sort of a race against time. No, I do understand. I'm just sort of, I don't know. It just seems, I don't know.
Well, and by the way, you'll find this interesting. This just came in from Andy about your mentioning the frequency with which President Obama mentions Ronald Reagan.
Mm.
He sent a link from Huffington Post that counts the number of times since taking office in 2009 that he has mentioned presidents. He has mentioned Dwight Eisenhower 90 times. He's meant, as of the date of this article, he's mentioned Lincoln 80 times. He's mentioned Bill Clinton 60 times. Teddy Roosevelt 45 times. Ronald Reagan 40, and Jimmy Carter 4. And Andy notes, it surprises me Reagan wasn't mentioned more. And note, stay away from Jimmy Carter. That's just bad karma.
Well, you know, I mean, just as long as he don't mention Buchanan, since I think that's who he is, but that's another conversation.
Yeah, well.
But, you know.
That may be the scariest comment you've ever uttered. Because we mean James, not Pat.
Civil War era.
Yeah, America's only bachelor president.
Yes, oh yes. Hey, did you hear about this Michigan teacher that was fired?
Oh my God.
And the thing is, you know, that's bad enough, but once again, of course, my thought is, what, they don't have worker protection? I looked up the school. It's a
charter school. Yes, it is.
This is when the teachers are becoming a job, not a profession. Because I'm thinking, how did they fire her? And I thought, oh my God, it's a charter school. And so, this is what they're set. I mean, it's bad that she got fired, but it's more troubling about the model that's coming now for people who teach. I mean, you're not going to be that concerned about anything but trying to keep your damn job. There's no job security if you can get fired for giving your kids an exercise in civics. Are you kidding me?
Well, the background for how this happened to her is stunning. Her children, and what, she's an eighth grade teacher, right?
Yeah, middle school.
And she is, she's one of those teachers who tries to deal with the wants and needs of her children. And
Detroit.
You're right.
Yeah.
And so what happens is her children, they have these dress-down days. And her children want to come up with a fundraiser for Trayvon Martin's parents. And so she says, okay, everybody will pay $1 who wants, and they say, we want to wear a hoodie for Trayvon. And so everybody who wants to wear a hoodie for Trayvon pays $1 to wear a hoodie on Friday. So she runs it up the chain of command, as she's supposed to. The principal says, okay, that sounds great. And then the superintendent of schools gets hold of it and says, oh, hell no! Even though there's been support for a whole bunch of other dress-down fundraisers. And then her students asked to present their idea to the superintendent in person, and for that, the superintendent suspended her for 2 days.
Right. No, it's...
And then when she followed up, she just flat-out fired her when she asked for, clarification. Well, look at the minutes of our meeting. And fired her.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, and it's just kind of, there's pushback. Because I hear that, various entities are stepping forward, demanding her reinstatement. But,
it goes hand in hand, of course, with what Scott Walker did in Wisconsin in the last couple of days. I guess it was Friday, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. You mean his, all those horrible bills?
Well, one in particular that eliminates the rights of discriminated people, to pursue recourse in the courts for it.
Right, no, and I mean, yeah, no, that's incredible, and also, you have to sit alone and be lectured to. You can't have a loved one with you when you're making decisions between you and your doctor. How about that one?
Oh, that's a beautiful thing, yeah.
No, that one's out. I just thought, oh, dear God, and then...
And they'll do that, and they'll do that under the rubric of patient privacy.
No, it's just horrific. I mean, isn't that guy up for recall?
Yeah, he is, and he's doubling down.
Well, it's incredible, and, that election is really important to keep an eye on. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, without a doubt.
I mean, if he gets back in, he really has to go away. That would be a huge victory for, the people. I don't know how else to express it.
Well, it will be a huge victory, but it's also an uphill struggle.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. That's what I know. I mean, it's a huge, incredible battle. I mean, I think he's the second governor we had it here, which was a horror show with our recall.
Yeah, and you got Arnold out of it.
Yeah, no, the whole thing was just such a, I can't even go into it. It was just so over the top. But no, with this, are they having a primary? For the Democratic,
I could be wrong, but there's a primary for the person who will run against him.
Right, and so we don't have any stars yet, huh? No Feingold, he ain't coughed up yet.
No, but I've been talking at some length.
Like that.
Well, no, I've been talking at some length with one of our friends up there, Bruce, and he's working hard for a one particular candidate and says she's just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So and I apologize for not being able to remember her name at this point.
No, I don't. I mean, I only go so deep with politics in Wisconsin, and that's only because of, you know, how it blew up with this maniac they have. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm following it because I really think that he's a tyrant, you know, and a horror show. And if he was to be yanked out of office, you know, Snyder would have to snap his head back a bit, because that's the other one that's beyond fascist. Snyder in Michigan.
Oh,
I've never seen anything like that.
Well, it's the atmosphere created by a creep like that that lets this eighth grade teacher, that makes things like this eighth grade teacher more likely to happen.
Well, yeah, and, you know, there's some real problems with the municipal bond market coming up in Detroit.
Well, this is the guy who declared martial law for city management, right?
Yeah, well, they're barely trying to hold on to keep from being completely overtaken. And, you know, there's some real issues, you know, when I think Detroit, what is it, like 67% black? I mean, there's some really disturbing trends about what's going on in Michigan. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, all the black people are completely disenfranchised from government.
Well, damn near persona non grata.
Yeah, and that shit is really getting to me. It's very disturbing what's happening in Michigan, so... If the Scott Walker, if he goes away, I think it would sort of temper a lot of this madness. I don't know what the recall situation is. I don't know if it's even possible in Florida, but I suspect that Scott is a one-termer, even in that hellhole. I think he's very unpopular, too.
Well, indeed, and I don't know, are you aware of the fact that apparently George Zimmerman's gone on the lam?
No, that's cool. You know, it's like a surprise, Bob. You know, I was looking at...
Yeah, he puts up a website soliciting money.
Oh, please. Well, he probably got whatever money and took the hell off. Or who knows? But who's surprised by this?
Well,
I mean, I'm not.
It's interesting, though, because, it's not just that he's gone. It's that he's gone enough that his lawyers went into court and said, we need to be relieved as counsel. And lawyers don't do that gladly or lightly, Sandra. They said that he is engaged in direct conversations with the special prosecutor, and that what's more, he's not answering the phone, and they think he's still in the United States, but he's not likely to be in Florida, and that he's even called Sean Hannity. He said, we believe he spoke directly to Sean, Urig said, and wouldn't elaborate, but...
Yeah, no. I mean,
It's going to be hard for him to go to Rio, though, or somewhere that extradition can't find him, because they don't have a stand in blaze rule, and there's lots of scary brown people there.
Well, you know, I don't know. He'll be able to blend in down.
Some of this is just damn kabuki drama. The attorneys also expressed concern about Zimmerman's emotional and physical safety.
Oh, yeah.
And said he may be suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, you know, Trayvon Martin's suffering from post-traumatic death disorder.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole thing is just, if it wasn't so serious, it would be beyond laughable, you know, indicative of a banana republic, you know what I mean? In the meanwhile, we're being told now, as a black person, that all these black people being shot, killed, and whatever, and it's not a hate crime.
And meanwhile, this little story sort of wandered around the internet, not getting just a hell of a lot of traction about the fact that white supremacists are now wandering around Sanford, Florida, looking for people to shoot.
Well, yeah, you know, no, it's too much, and they're civil, and they're also civil rights organizations too. In case you didn't know.
Oh, okay. Well, that's going to work out nicely.
Anyway, yeah, so...
Yeah, yeah, know, because Fox said that, described a white, you know, the white socialist or national socialist, Nazis, described them as a civil rights organization.
Right. But, you know,
and then apologized by saying, we meant to call them a self-termed or so-called.
No, they didn't mean nothing. It's Radio Rwanda. I mean, it's what it is. You know, but I'm still disturbed by the Tulsa thing. It's just like, you know, the whole, you know, when you have these white talking heads, you know, identifying the blacks, it just feeds the monolithic nature.
Yeah, those people.
Hence, you have some idiot who thinks that he was wrong by one darkie, so I'm going to take all of the darkies out. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, you know, five for one.
And it's just like, dear, and Tulsa, of all places. You know?
Yeah, of all places that has a horror in its history.
History, and it's interesting because they had some meetings while they were trying to find these two freaks, and you had a lot of chatter about, oh, well, we're going to have to take this into our own hands.
Yeah, because we're not going to. What,
no,
what year was that? 1929, 1925, something like that?
21 is when, and you know that involved dropping bombs from the air. You understand that was going on, too. I mean, it was a full assault on this town from air, land, and
yeah,
sea.
The town had developed a healthy.
It was the richest black town in America.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah, and that had to be rubbed out.
That was it. That was the whole connection to it. But anyway, I don't know. I noticed that the white elites decided that, oh no, we couldn't keep this other racist elite in his job, so they fired him. But it's really random when they decide it's too much white supremacy, isn't it?
Well, you know, and
Derbyshire,
the funny thing,
Derbyshire.
I never John Derbyshire. Because I never understood that the Klan was any form of a healthy advancement of the political discourse in this country. There's no good amount of Klan. It's like there's no way to have a good dose of the clap.
It's sort of I'm thinking, okay, you got rid of that racist, and next up, we're talking about the National Review, the people who said that the church bombing in the 60s was done by some crazy Negro to frame up a white person. That's the National Review.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Don't tell me nothing.
But the thing is, the reactionary right has now come up with this meme that basically it's first they came for Pat Buchanan and I said nothing, and then they came for John Derbyshire and I said nothing, and then they came for George Zimmerman, blah, blah, blah.
The victimization of...
Yeah, they're the victims. They're the victims.
Well, that's always a hallmark of the white supremacy in this country. It never ceases to amaze me that they're scared of me. No, MFers, I'm scared of you. Okay.
Well, the thing that got John Derbyshire fired, you know, that piece that he published called The Talk White Version.
Yes.
You know, there is no comparison between a black mother who says to her son, you know, listen, here's how you have to live in America. And he's a white guy telling Asians and white people to stay away from black people they don't know. Well, how many black people do they know? That's basically avoid black culture. But, you know, listen to the music. And dress the dress and talk the talk. Because, you know, they're not going to go back to doing the minuet and sitting around listening to Verdi. So it's just a ridiculous degree of hypocrisy.
Well, no, but we can make it a bit more real if we send him to Baltimore, though. He might want to go down there for a night.
Because that wasn't included in his list in the talk. Don't get loaded on St. Patty's Day in Baltimore.
I know, I shouldn't even be mad because that was pretty horrific, you know. But, you know, he can go down there and get a real, you know, get something that he'll remember.
But the thing is, that story, as we discussed, it's horrifying because, you know, nobody got shot. Somebody got hurt. Nobody got shot. But dude woke up in his hotel room, couldn't remember what happened because he was so drunk.
I'm saying, you know, to me, I'm like, you need to stay, and, you know, being outside drunk can be problematic.
Well, that's the thing. It's not the whiteness, it's the drunkness.
Well, anyway, you know, but that was a hideous little story, and I'm surprised. I really haven't seen it around anymore.
Oh, it'll blow up. Rush just hasn't gotten around to it yet.
Okay, I'm just, you know, I keep waiting, but I haven't. Listen, speaking of that, you know that Isaac, that's That is a shame, that little narration he did. I saw that.
The Clever Monkeys of Jersey Shore. Oh, yeah, yeah, big kudos to Isaac.
Listen, that was so damn funny. And plus, you know, I'll be honest with you, I've never watched. I looked at it, I thought, oh, my God. You know, those people were freaking me out. I thought
you were going to say you'd never seen one of the nature documentaries.
No, I've seen that. I just haven't really, that Jersey, I didn't realize it was that damn ghetto. Damn, that shit is off the chain.
And you know, the little bit of magic that happens here where Albert just sort of puts it out there and then Isaac makes it happen and we're all sitting around just wetting ourselves because we're laughing so hard.
Oh, no, that's going to have to go on the road, that little piece.
That needs to get viral real big.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, that was beyond the beyond.
That's why I hashtagged Jersey Shore when I tweeted it.
Well, I hope Isaac got his release statements from Albert. I'm sure Albert don't care, right? Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, it just escalated. You know what I mean? That whole clip was like, Jesus.
No, Isaac put some real art into that. There's no getting around it.
No, that shit was funny as hell. But anyway, it's just opposite world. It really was bizarre. Where do you have that posted, though?
It's in the show post for today, and I'm not. I hope Susan got it. She may not have. But I also tweeted it, and it's on my Facebook.
What about your friend Oz? What's his name?
Osborne.
I need
to make sure he sees it. Yeah, it's there. Under the post, Tuesday Head On Radio 4/10/12 Magic Moments.
And Reverbo, you know, I mean this.
Oh yeah, that'll be the, yeah. Reverbo will be devastated.
Oh, God. Listen, you know, something else I wanted to ask, and I just completely, I think it was, oh, how could I have to talk about this before I go. What's that bitch doing in West Hollywood?
See, I want
to
know.
You ain't been to West Hollywood. I have. West Hollywood is hella fun. It's very fun, and it's extra fun if you're a young man.
Well, so see, and Jim was asking earlier, what about West Hollywood? I guess, shall we say that West Hollywood is Southern California's answer to Fire Island?
Yeah, West Hollywood is great, though.
It's big fun. Yeah, it's a hoot.
But it's, you know, it's just as gay as what? So, and he getting his little feet and hands done? He could have went anywhere in L.A. There's loads of places. Hello?
Why L.A.? I mean, see, that's this is the part of the program where we play to connect the dots, because I can't make them connect, Sandra, because he had to be in deep in the heart of Texas. God bless Texas megachurch or whatever it is, to deliver a Sunday Easter sermon on Sunday. Which means he needs to get in because he needs his beauty rest on Saturday. Now, this whole little Manny and Petty thing went down when?
I know.
I mean, there's just a little timeline work going on here. That's all I'm saying.
The whole thing is beyond funny. You know, and it's just like, are we supposed to really buy that, you know, my personal relationship with Jesus, aw, shucks, I'm in West Hollywood? What the hell?
Witnessing to the sinners?
Anyway, next thing to be, oh, he accidentally stumbled on purpose accidentally to Greenwich, you know, doing something down there.
Yeah, you know, he was trying to make sure that he didn't ruin his pedicure, and he fell over, and, you know, his penis wound up in some guy's mouth.
Or he on a little, you know, day trip to Fire Island. I mean, what's happening? You know what? As I predicted, he'll be turned out in a year.
Well, you know, there was that observation that maybe this had something to do with Rex Ryan and the whole foot business.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, whatever they want to roll it into, but I don't know.
Don't want to get no turf toe.
And then he's going out with that beard, I mean, Taylor Swift, you know. poor dear. That poor girl, I'm not saying poor as in I know she's successful, but she really, you know, I don't know her situation with the men, but she just goes from abuse to abuse, Kanye West, and God knows what. It's just like, girlfriend.
We gotta talk.
Yes. Now she dating that fool?
Well, I mean, from Kanye, you know, I don't know, maybe he's a little bit more vanilla than Kanye? I mean...
Well, Kanye is also, you know, that's a little sugar. I do Cedric the Entertainer on that. I don't know. Anyway. And let's give our praises and thanks to old Ozzy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know? I mentioned him at the top of the program. That had poor Michael confused the 6 ways from Sunday.
Oh, come on. You know what? This dude, he is forever saying shit. So why are they surprised?
Right. Well, but you can say stuff, but there's just things you can't say in South Florida.
Well,
and you can't say that you can't say anything except Fidel Castro is the devil. You know, in South Florida, you can't point out, for instance, that the postpartum death rate among mothers is lower in Cuba than it is in America. You can't point out that the infant mortality rate in Cuba is lower than it is in America because, you know, well, those are communist babies.
And, you know, he's from Venezuela himself, so it's all...
Yeah, and the thing is, he's praised Hugo Chavez, and he's also said Chavez has problems.
Yeah, he's criticized them, too. But what he said about Fidel is damn true. That motherfucker is still here.
Yeah.
After, you know, what, 5, 6, 7, 8 presidents? Give me a break. He is hella
11.
Tough.
11, we counted.
Okay, well, he's still here.
Yeah.
He seems like he's going to be here.
And here's what's interesting. He really did give up power. He passed power over to Raul, and that was it. And now he's just being an old man who dabbles in government.
No, but he be commentating. Listen, wasn't he talking about what Obama was wearing the other day?
Yeah, well, he did. Yeah, and that's the thing.
It's a comedy show now. It's hilarious. I'm sorry. All of it's funny to me. I know Castro is, you know, not, quote, a good guy, but he is talking about folks. I'm like, damn fool.
Well, but, you know, Castro's not a good guy compared to whom? Richard Nixon?
But his commentaries are funny, though.
Well, let's remember, this is not some guy who just wandered out of the jungle. He is a, you know, he's a law school trained member of the bourgeoisie.
Yeah, no, I know.
Remember, all successful revolutions happen in the middle class.
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, what, we always have to reference movies, but my reference for Cuba is The Godfather. Michael was like, oh, no, motherfucker, I got to get out of here. What's going on in Cuba?
Yeah.
You know?
Bye now.
It's like, you know, these people willing to blow themselves up and die. I can't do business here, you know, so.
No, this is not a good business environment. And you know, I go back to what Tony Bourdain said in his famous, now famous Cuba episode. He said, I can't tell you what's right and I can't tell you what's wrong. And I can't, you know, the politics are not the conversation I want to have. He says, all I want to tell you is if you can get to Cuba before all of this changes, do so. Because you know what's going to happen, Sandra. You know that the minute they say that, you know, the minute that they start pumping the air out of Fidel's glass coffin, there's going to be a Starbucks on every corner, and the ones that don't have Starbuckses are going to have McDonald's. And then the real predators are going to come in. Goldman Sachs is going to come fix the economy. And, you know, the usual suspects. And it will turn into just another nightmare Caribbean nation.
Right. And, you know, the farm. Yeah, no. It is. Who knows? I agree with you on that. They seem to be a lot better off now than they will be when the neoliberal Washington consensus hits the place.
And it's going to hit worse than any hurricane that has ever struck that island.
Oh, listen, anyway, I've kept you on too long, so
have
a good evening.
You have a good evening, too, and it was a wonderful conversation, Sandra.
Okay, bye.
Thanks. Bye now. You know, again, where Tebow's concerned, it's not about gender or orientation. It's about the hypocrisy. I mean, did Taylor Swift say, oh, West Hollywood's so much fun, let's go? Okay, fine. But for a guy who believes that marriage is between one man and one woman and that the homosexuals are unnatural, that's a hell of a place to go for a pedicure. You see? Right. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
It's Andy.
Hey, Andy. What's up, man?
Oh, not much.
Good commentary flowing along the way.
Yeah, I had a few emails today.
Yeah, and okay, so it was, and I got your last one. It was FDR. He actually made 45 references to FDR. Well, I'll be damned.
Yeah, that is surprising. You would think it'd be Teddy Roosevelt, not Franklin. But the article does say Franklin.
Wow. But you know, but it's the Reagan references that you know, and the business about, you know, my summer reading list includes a biography of Ronald Reagan, blah, 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 blah. That's not so much.
True. This 60-minute deal that you started out with, too, that blew my mind on Sunday. I usually don't listen. I listen to it on the radio here. And it did blow my mind, the lineup of shows or vignettes that they had.
Well, the whole thing was a pay on to the 1%.
Right, total hypocrisy. I couldn't believe it when they did the parallel one. What are we? Who gives an F about polo with all the problems we have in this country?
Well, and it was the sort of symbiotic relationship between the close of a golf tournament that is nothing but an exercise in various forms of bigotry, followed up by a 60 Minutes that announced that Mike Wallace was dead, which basically means that, you know, real journalism is dead at that program, and then, you know, you get this, the thing about Europe and the Euro that was so blithely clueless about why people might be upset about this so-called austerity. And then they move into polo. We get polo and golf on the same day? Really, CBS?
Yeah, and it was such a contrast when comparing with Mike Wallace, because I really thought the show was going to have a lot about Mike Wallace and maybe go back and do a little chronology of, the different...
Yeah, they said we get that next week.
Yeah, that's next week. But that's really why I tuned in. I was hoping to hear all the great interviews Mike Wallace has done, man. He just handles people.
Well, silly me, I was there because I was... I was there to catch the playoff in the Masters and see if Bubba would win over the... You know. When the playoff at the Masters is between a Bubba and an Afrikaans guy whose family benefited from apartheid, it's distilled down to its essence, isn't it?
Only appropriate.
Yeah, Uli Oosterhoofen, or you know, whatever his name was.
Yeah. That's an anachronism, too. What's going on in Augusta, that just shouldn't be. Not in this day and age. It just shouldn't be, and it still is. And I don't know, that woman from IBM, I just can't relate to somebody like that. If I were her, I would stay 1,000 miles from that place. I wouldn't give them the benefit of her presence at all. I mean, what garbage. There's a person with no backbone or no spine.
No, well, no, she's got plenty of spine, Andy, and her spine is dedicated to self-preservation at the top of a very tall 1% heap called IBM. She wasn't going to make noise about it because IBM thinks there's some prestige in sponsoring the Masters. So she wasn't going to make any noise about not getting the green jacket that a penis-endowed IBM CEO would get, because she knows she is female and the board will ditch her ass in a country second if she makes those kind of waves, because it's IBM. Remember, IBM's the place where everybody dressed the same for 50 freaking years.
Right. The uniform.
Yeah.
The suit. White shirt, blue suit. That's IBM.
Right.
And, you know, they did have their connections with Hitler as well.
Oh, yes, they did.
The pounding machine who kept all the tabulation on all the people.
Oh, I'm sure some of the death camp tabulations were done with IBM machinery.
You got it. It was IBM's hard.
You know, just like Bush financial genius helped Fritz Thyssen produce the Zyklon B that went into the death camps.
Right.
It's just, you know, and that, you know, that's not me being some sort of reactionary. It's just history. It's like the name of that website, History as a Weapon.
Right. Union Chemical, I think, of New Jersey supplied a lot of the gases that were necessary right out of New Jersey, controlled by Brown Brothers Harriman and the Bush plant and the Walkers. Anything for a buck. That's the thing. That's the way these 1%ers are. It's anything for a buck. Anything to keep my status. No integrity, no ethics, no morals. None.
No concern for whether people live or die, eat or starve. No.
Well, I got the money. No integrity. There's nothing there.
Right, because that's one of the central tenets of the religion that is capitalism. You know, let's quit kidding ourselves about Christianity in 21st century America. The religion in this country is capitalism. Its central tenet of faith is unbridled greed, and its high priests reside on Wall Street. I mean, is that a fair assessment?
Or in the boardroom, or in the CEO's office, all over the country, right?
Well, that's the priesthood, but the high priests are on Wall Street.
Correct. That's where the major direction comes from. That's the big enchilada.
And you know, efforts to rein them in seem to be something approaching non-existent.
Banking capital of the world. But you got to have somebody like a Franklin Delano Roosevelt that's willing to go out there and admit the hate. You know they're going to hate you, and you better accept it.
Right, and you know, as Sandra noted, there was that one beautiful moment that Obama had when he said, "All that stands between you and the pitchforks is me." But you know, I think they hated being reminded of that. You know, the 1% never likes to be reminded that it can all come crashing down fairly easily without a fairly substantial protective network.
Right. They just don't fathom the hate that is building in this country and continues to build for what they are doing to us. They just don't get it, and when they do get it, it'll be too late.
Right, you know, when the pitchforks and torches do come out, if they ever do in this country, and I have my doubts, you know, the rich will, but why? We were so good to you. We tipped well.
Yeah, right. Bottom line is they don't give a rat's ass what happened to the 99%. Just die, baby. If you can't get health care, tough. That's your tough love. Just die.
Right.
But it's the Alan Grayson gig, you know. Don't get sick. You do get sick, die quickly, baby. Just die quickly. Don't drag it out. It'll cost your family money. Just die. We're the only ones that get to live and get the best health care. That's it. This Ozzie Guillen thing, I did hear Dave Byron give a commentary.
Yeah, I saw a little bit from his written piece. What a bunch of foolishness.
Yeah, he just basically, you know, Ozzie Guillen really doesn't know his, you know, ass from his elbow when it comes to politics. He really didn't understand what he was saying. He didn't know it was going to get him in that much. The only thing he liked about Fasco was Fasco's an Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, he's the Teflon King. Anything.
I mean, he called him a son of a bitch in the same statement, but that's not enough. You have to say, in order to appease those the wild-eyed lunatics of that older generation in South Florida, you have to say that he is a sure enough devil. He's the monster. He eats babies for breakfast. You have to say that, or you're not hard enough on Castro.
Right. And like I said, who knows worse? Batista was 1,000 times worse than the amount of pain he brought to the overall populace.
Yeah, but see that you file that one under the old, you file that under the in the Nixon file of he may be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch.
But you know, 1,000 peasants that die and don't have health care and are groveling in the streets, one 1%er makes up for 1,000 peasants. Yeah, that's the
right. That's the ratio. One percenter is equal 1,000 proles.
That's right, and all the 1%ers are now in Miami. So they have the political sway there.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like that article from the Telegraph that Sandra sent along, where talking about Palm Beach, and that Chevy Chase Club in Maryland. It says the Chevy Chase, however, is positively welcoming compared with Palm Beach. Even Jewish multimillionaires cannot buy access to this sealed society. We don't have a queen, but we do have Palm Beach, as one society Philly boasted to me when I visited. There it was again, I thought, that warped Anglophilia that inspired the very worst in America from Harvard to Hollywood.
Palm Beach.
Yeah. But it's all over the country. You know, I guess the best distillation of it all is to go back to George Carlin, Andy. There is a club, and you're not in it.
Right.
And you never will be. And the invitations aren't going out. You know, the story broke today that three public school teachers in Maryland were the ones who won the Maryland share of that massive Mega Millions jackpot. Couldn't have happened to nicer people. And contrary to the fact that all these right-wing weirdos, them public school teachers, they're just in it for themselves. They're just teaching to get rich. Well, it turns out these women are not going to quit teaching. Yeah, they're going to go to Europe. Yeah, they're going to set up their kids' college funds. They're going to do things with the money that ought to be done with the money. They'll probably give to some charities. But no, sorry, they're not quitting work. They're not going to... Yeah.
Teachers in this country deserve every dime and nickel they earn, and they should be getting a heck of a lot more. They are the most underpaid class of workers in this country, and they deserve every darn nickel, and they should have a heck of a lot more, because they add a heck of a lot more to this society than any damn CEO does. That's for darn
sure. Any CEO or any Wall Street banker.
The CEOs and Wall Street bankers are a net negative. Just like globalization is a net negative on this country and on the well-being of the citizenry, like it is in every other country. The only ones who benefit are the 1% and the CEO class and that top Wall Street class, just like you're saying. They are a negative. Teachers are a net positive, big time, in this society. And you know, in a place like that, Finland, the teachers are some of the most well-paid working people in the country, in Finland. It's one of the hardest jobs to get, because they take the top graduates and they pay them tremendous. They put them in the 1%. It's an amazing difference in society. And do they have a decent society? You bet they do. You bet they do. A society with integrity, where people are treated with decency and everybody has health care, and people are taken care of and given the benefit of the doubt. Not here.
Not here. No, that's the thing. This is a brutal place. That's why I was so, that's why I was so moved by that piece that Mark sent along, from historyasaweapon.com, that piece by, Henry George. I mean, this is 125 years ago, and he's describing things that sound like they were published today. He says there is a cause for this poverty, and if you trace it down, you will find its root in a primary injustice, Look over the world today. Poverty everywhere. The cause must be a common one. You cannot attribute it to the tariff or the form of government or to this thing or that in which nations differ, because as deep poverty is common to them all, the cause that produces it must be a common cause. What is that common cause? There is one sufficient cause that is common to all nations, and that is the appropriation as the property of some of that natural element on which and from which all must live. Now, this isn't American. This is, like I said with Sandra, this isn't from the Communist Manifesto. This is a guy who worked his way up, you know, the whole Mark Twain route, you know, learning to set type, being a printer's devil, blah, 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 and just happens to observe the world around him and see how dirty, nasty, inequitably, utterly unfair, and in fact, predatory it is.
Right. Oh, that's capitalism.
Exactly. Our religion. Easter Schmeester. Capitalism and money is the god.
Right. It's all about taking as much as you can get. You know, keep saying this on your show. They want it all. And it's never been a truer statement. They want it all. They want everything you got. Jim Carlin says the same thing. Welcome to the Carlin case. Look at this. They want it all. He's the one who coined that. They want, they're going to get it. And they're not going to stop until they get it, unless we stop them.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's why I'm kind of waiting as spring, you know, once spring is in full blossom, waiting to see the further incarnations of Occupy.
Right.
It's got to persist, but there are also some scary elements to it. I saw an account of one Occupy meeting where they say, you know, we don't want to get in politics. Well, everything's politics. And if you just want to stand outside and chant, you know, that's great, but it's, you know, there's, and the electoral system is still rigged with video game voting and all of that crap. But the system's not going to change without changing it. You see what I'm saying? They make me nervous.
Right?
This.
They're on a different. A lot of these occupiers are on a different plane. And yeah, that is one way to push. But again, we talked about this before. You got a lot of Ron Paul devotees.
Oh yeah.
People that are pretty naive.
Well, and that's the key. You have to be profoundly naive to be a Ron Paul devotee, and you also have to be pretty tolerant of, you know, things like racism.
I'm not going to argue with you there, man. You know that.
You know, but then again, most of those Ron Paul devotees that you're talking about, and you've had far more experience than I have working around inside various Occupy movements, Andy. Most of those Ron Paul devotees don't know that little story about the butcher in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Once you know that, you know everything about Ron Paul you could possibly ever need to know. Because the only thing that motivates him is greed.
Correct. I was up in a fine trying to convince him that he was a racist from all the comments that he's had from his newsletter that are documented during the 80s and 90s.
Well, that's like, you know, with Santorum bowing out today, you know, now it's Romney. It's just going to be Romney. We knew it was going to be Romney. The dumb show that precedes the big theater piece is now over with, and already the terms are being defined of how we can talk about Romney. And apparently one of the things we can't ask Romney about is why people of dark skin were not deemed to be full recipients of so-called salvation in his church until 1978. That is off limits.
You know, just look at the way the Mormons treat women, too. In the Mormon church, women are second-class citizens. They're just to be seen and not heard.
Yeah.
They have no place whatsoever. And if I was a
in line with that old joke, Andy, yes, a Mormon woman's uterus is a clown car.
That's right. It is just for the men's gratification and perpetrating, making more children. That's it. It's creating benefiting the Mormon race, keeping that race going, jettisoning the population. That's all it is. a woman is just an instrument to be used for that.
I mean, one of the pieces of historical revisionism that's out there is now that the Mormon Church says that Joseph Smith wasn't really a polygamist.
Yes.
The other wives he took, he never had any children by them, you know, that anybody knows of, and that theirs was only a spiritual marriage for purposes of binding them to him in the afterlife. Gee, I wonder if their husbands got bound in a spiritual three-way, you know?
Well, Brigham Young made up for Mr. Smith anyway, so.
Yeah, because he took it seriously.
Or Young's running around with
Yeah, lots of Youngs.
Mormons that can trace back their ancestors.
Yeah, Youngs out west are kind of like Khans in Central Asia. There's a reason that last name is there.
Right. So just to clean up some old business, it really upset me a month ago with the whole AIPAC thing and Obama with the Goldstone Report.
Yeah.
Middle East. And he's even admitted it, and Netanyahu has even admitted it. Obama went to bat for the Israelis with the Goldstone Report and ran interference. You know, truth means nothing with that Operation Cast Lead, where they killed 1,400 Palestinian women and children, mainly. And
yeah, it doesn't matter. And
during Operation Cast Lead,
you can't be the president of the United States if you don't bow and scrape and completely abase yourself before Israel.
But Benji, why aren't you nice to me? Look what I did for you with the Goldstone Report. I completely shared that. I pushed that under the table, man, for you. Why aren't you nice to me? Oh, Obama, your coward is disgraceful. I cannot stand the man. I cannot stand Obama because of his cowardice. I've never seen anything great like him.
But I guess I've got to ask, Andy, what president is going to stand up to Israel?
Even George H.W. Bush stood up to Israel, which was surprising. Believe it or not, George H.W. Bush told the Israelis to take a hike. He told them, stop with the settlement. And they did.
And he was a what? Yeah, one-term president.
But he did, you asked.
Yeah.
Did.
But there are you don't get to be president unless you bow and scrape to Israel, and you don't get to be a two-term president unless you double down on your bowing and scraping once you're in your first term. I'm not excusing the conduct, but I am observing the reality, Andy.
It's still not right, and it shouldn't be reality. That's a little pissant country of 5 million people. It's a theocracy.
It's a little bit of fascist nothing.
Theocracy. It is a theocracy, right? It's a fascist.
You know, if we want to work on a really important relationship in the global community right now, I would say that our relationship with Brazil should be of much more concern to us than our relationship with Israel. Our relationship with China is more important than our relationship with Israel. But I can come up with any number of countries that our relationship with should be more important than our relationship with Israel. We get nothing from Israel except for the fact that Israel is the fetish darling of the fundamentalist right, and, you know, as noted in that conversation with Sandra, the only thing remaining of the Bill of Rights in this country is the religious aspect of the First Amendment and the lunatic interpretation of the Second. The rest of them can go hang.
Right.
I mean, isn't that the truth?
Yeah. You know, that Rousseff, the prime minister in charge of, or maybe she's the president of Brazil, was just in Washington the other day, was getting on Obama's case because of our policies with the dollar being so inexpensive compared to their real, because we're killing their trade. Now, you know, we're actually trading with them, and we're doing a lot of damage to their natural gas market, for instance. Or not the natural gas, actually, but the alcohol, the corn alcohol and ethanol. we are exporting a heck of a lot because it's much cheaper in U.S. dollars because the real is not up so much because our monetary policy is so weak. You know, our interest rates are so low. We're killing them. And Rusev is really upset because we are doing in their economy big time, especially when it comes to this ethanol, because they have a big ethanol business. And we're flooding it with our ethanol product big time. Because we have a, you know, we have a bad trade deficit with China, and they're in the ethanol, I think it was like 7 or 8 to 1 that we traded our ethanol compared to what we imported from there. I don't even know why we're importing anyway. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Our dollar is so weak. So yeah, you're right. Brazil would be the place to wrap around it. That's a huge emerging country, and they have a lot of sway in this world. They're going to continue having more sway because they're getting their economic act together this time. And they make the tough decisions there.
And, you know, going, you know, we mentioned 60 Minutes earlier, Andy. Go back to that 60 Minutes earlier, that episode earlier, or that segment with, what's his name, Immelt?
Jeff Immelt.
You know, GE?
Yes, Jeff Immelt.
And, you know, corporate America understands the value of Brazil to the extent that corporate America is taking hellacious loads of American jobs to Brazil.
That's right. Because they have to, because Brazil mandates that. They mandate that you buy a certain amount of their products and you manufacture a certain amount of your products there. They're stupid. They don't want what's happened here, where we've just totally deindustrialized our country with globalization and they destroyed the working class. They understand. They've had riots and upset citizenry there. You know, the people there.
Well, the gentleman who was on the program last night, Mr. Mann, documents Brazil's trauma from the moment of its discovery by white people to the present. They learned the hard lessons of brute force capitalism and apparently don't want to go back. And more power to them for not.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Andy, I got to roll, but it's been a great conversation, my friend.
Just one other thing. Hillary Clinton made a statement, a thriving China is good for America. Where is she at? You know, in 2011, $295 billion trade deficit, net deficit with China. That's insane, a thriving China. The worst China, and China just had bad inflation numbers. They're going to have to ratchet back their economy more to get their inflation under control because it just went up when they expected it to go down. That's one of the reasons why our stock market is down so much, because China is going to have to ratchet up their interest rates and slow down their economy. Anyway, that trade deficit with China is killing us because that also affects our GDP. A negative trade deficit puts a damper on our growth numbers. All right. Take care. Enough talking to you.
Take care, Andy. Bye now.
All right. Bye.
Our good buddy Andy, just a few minutes before the end of the show, let's see, checking the email in here. Bill, our buddy Bill from Cleveland, noted, most of the ethnic dads, including West by God Virginians I saw in the 50s and 60s, would have been in prison or the funny farm if their female children went out dressed like those on Jersey Shore, those Jersey Shore ladies. The only way to view Jersey Shore is, as Albert noted, as a some sort of bizarre nature documentary. That's all there is. Jim, who doesn't like the fact that I don't like opera and don't like polo, thinks apparently I don't like ballet either. No, I find ballet quite beautiful because it evolves and transforms. Opera doesn't. But he notes when we talked about Cuba, how long do you think you would last in Havana or Cuba proper? Your position would be triangulated and you would be in Moro prison so quickly. Jim, millions of people, much like me, travel to Cuba every year as tourists. It's just that Americans, except under limited circumstances, cannot. I have no problem imagining that I would be just fine in Cuba. Just as fine as those other millions of tourists. That's all. Then again, you know, I don't see much to triangulate about the fact that it is noteworthy and laudable
that Cuba has a lower infant mortality rate than we do, and we've got a for-profit healthcare system, or that Cuba has a lower postpartum maternal death rate than we do, and we've got a capitalist for-profit healthcare system. They have sent highly competent doctors around the world. You know, there's a lot of good to be said, but I'm not gonna go where Ozzie Guillen went. At least, no, I'll tell you where I wouldn't survive is South Florida, because I'm not gonna walk around with a button that says Fidel is the devil. Because you know what, if Fidel is the devil, then he is a devil with a lot of company. Nixon was a devil. Brezhnev was a devil. Pinochet was our devil. Batista was a devil. So, you know, deviltry is something that operates, without a doubt, on a sliding scale. So that's the close of this Tuesday show. It sure has been fun, and I appreciate all the conversation. We'll be back with prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. The challenge from Dr. John is still on the table and needs matching. He will match five thrifty 250 contributions to get the fundraising done that we need to do for this evening show, which will actually be for yesterday evening show, and we'll start on today, tomorrow. I know, time is a fluid and inconstant thing, isn't it? Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, our news ninjas, Susan and Jean. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo, our periodic op-ed columnist. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox, who is out on the road, I think, and quite busy right now. And sure hope you enjoyed your vacation, Ben Birch. God knows you deserved it. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go there, sign up for the newsletter, maybe get the coolest T-shirt in America, save the endangered hillbilly, and become a part of the solution to the Appalachian apocalypse, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.